You are listening to Comics Reviews with Rob and Dave.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Comics Reviews. I am one half of this dynamic duo, Rob, along with the other half, Dave.
Yep.
Say hi, Dave.
Hello.
The peanut butter to my jelly.
Ew.
And the third voice that you just heard, friend of the podcast, Ryan from the Faster Than the World podcast. Say hello.
Hello, everybody.
Before we jump in, if you want to actually introduce yourself to our listeners and plug your podcast, have them check it out.
Sure. As Rob mentioned, my name is Ryan. I am a longtime comic book reader since the mid-80s, which is saying a lot, considering, you know, what year we're in. my show, Faster Than the World, it started off as a show that was about the collision of art and commerce, and now it's actually kind of taken on a life of its own where I basically just talk to people that I find interesting. So yeah, that's that. And you can check it out, fttwsocial.com, or just search Faster Than the World on SoundCloud.
Excellent. Yes, nice. go check it out. And I'm not saying that because I was on an episode. I would say that otherwise too.
But you could start with that episode too.
You can.
Or you can start with the one where I talked to Ryan from Yellow Card, which was totally weird.
you got a lot of stuff lined up though.
So Northwest Comic Con or Emerald City Comic Con is going on right now. So I was trying to get as many people as I could, but people get super busy. So I'm having to juggle so many things this weekend, which is super crazy.
Absolutely. I understand. I'm still trying to work on an interview that a creator agreed to back in October. So that has not happened yet. And will probably not happen at this point. But yes, it's understandable with everyone being so busy during con season. Well, speaking of conventions, actually, do you want to talk a little bit about Emerald City? I know you went yesterday.
Yeah, I went yesterday. So Emerald City Comic Con, for people who don't know, it's in Seattle. And it's our big Northwest one here. I think it's might be even bigger than Wizard World in Portland. I don't know. Generally speaking, like, I'm not a big fan of conventions, really. And every year I go to this one, I'm always like, this is the last year, but, Rob Liefeld came to this one and it's been like 9 years since he's made it a Seattle appearance. So I kind of felt the need to go this year. And he also took part in the Image Comics 25th anniversary panel yesterday, which I was super stoked on.
I heard for one that's awesome about Liefeld, he's going to be here for C2E2, which is actually put on by Reed Pop, the same people that do Emerald City.
Yeah.
So it seems like a lot of the same creators are coming to Chicago. But I did hear, I was going to put this in news, but I figured it might be a good time to talk about it now. I kind of heard that Kirkman threw some shade at Valiant during the Image panel. Did you catch that?
I think it was in jest, because they're all kind of like, you know, taking shots at each other. the biggest one was that they opened up the first 30 minutes, because it was like an hour, maybe an hour and 15 minutes, but the first half hour was like dedicated to everybody shitting on Jim Lee because he wasn't there. So they're all telling like these embarrassing Jim Lee stories, which was amusing to me.
That's hysterical.
But yeah, if you are, I mean, I know people, there are polarizing opinions on Rob Liefeld, and, you know, I feel like I'm not any different. Like, you know, when I became a snob about comics, because I mean, you know, that was the heyday for me, was his run on X-Force and then all those early Image books. But, you know, as I've gotten older, I definitely had that turn of like, yo, fuck Rob Liefeld. But as I've got even older, I've come to appreciate him, and he's like a super sweet guy. Like, you know, if you follow him on Twitter or Instagram, like he has like, sometimes he'll just like have like these like really super motivational tweets. So
I listened to his recent interview on Word Balloon with John Suntris, and it was a super long interview. Like, John will ask him a question, he'll go on and for 45 minutes with an answer, and he always has a lot to say, but it seems like he has really good insight about the industry and everything, because, I mean, you know, he was one of the founders of Image, and he worked for Marvel and during a really tumultuous time, and you know, to be fair, you know, love or hate Liefeld, there would not be a Deadpool movie or a Deadpool 2 with Nathan Summers coming soon without him, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Nice Easter egg in that one scene. I know we'll talk about that at some point, but
I got that. That was the thing that excited me the most about that little Deadpool teaser.
Yeah, I saw that, and I was like, I mean, before they leaked the footage, or I don't know, I guess it's not really leaked since Ryan Reynolds put it out, but there was a theater capture that went out the night before last, or the night that Logan opened up, and you can kind of see that in the phone booth, but it was nice to see like a HD quality version of it.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so yeah, Comic-Con was cool. I mean, my favorite part of any con is Artist Alley. Like, I know a lot of people go for celebrities and stuff, and actually this is the first year where I did a celebrity photo op. Sean Gunn was there, so I'm a fan of Guardians, but I'm a bigger fan of Gilmore Girls. So I that was a photo op that I was more than happy to pay for.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. But yeah, Artist Alley was cool. I got to see, like, you know, people who, like, I didn't see Dustin Nguyen. Like, his table was mislabeled, but I got to see, like, Kate Leth, who does Hellcat, and I got to very briefly talk to Garcia Lopez, who's like the DC guy in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah.
And you know, was just, you know, kind of nerded out a little bit, where I was like, hey, just so you know, because of superpowers, I fucking love comic books.
So that's excellent.
That was cool.
I always love the conventions like that, just because you can have those one-on-one time with the creators, even though sometimes it's a little hectic, but I don't know, it always means a lot to meet those people. It's like kind of cool putting a face to the creator, because a lot of these, it's just names on a book, and you know, you're reading stories by characters that aren't their creations or anything, and you see the people, meet the people behind it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. And even, like, you know, they also, you know, the exhibitors are great too. Like, the Silver Sprocket guys were there, and I don't know if you, for anybody who aren't part of the intersection of punk rock and comics, like, they're like a small, basically like a punk rock comic / record label. And I got to, you know, meet those guys, and we were talking about the current Red Bubble situation and talking shit about that. So it was cool though. So yeah.
Excellent. Good times. Are you going back tomorrow or?
We'll see.
To be determined.
Yeah, TBD.
So I was gonna talk about Northwest Indiana Comic Con that I went to last week, but it's not nearly as cool as Emerald City. It's a tiny. Well, I'll talk about it briefly, I guess. Tiny little convention, and it's probably like 40 minutes away from Chicago, so it's not terribly far. There was actually another smaller convention going on in the Chicago suburbs as well, so I was kind of torn between the two. But my friend Paul, who writes and draws Robots with Coffee, he was at Indiana, so I figured I'd stop by and see him. And he tabled with, name is eluding me, Keith something, but he wrote Victory City for IDW. He actually works at the comic shop I go to. It was pretty cool. Like, Dan Doherty, Tim Seeley, Mike Norton, they were all there. Gabbo. But it took 40 minutes to get into the convention. It was in this tiny little, it was like this Norwegian Orthodox church. It was
weird.
Yeah, it was crazy. But the layout was kind of terrible, just because it's a round space. So the aisles were awkward, and they kind of like bent towards the ends, you know, to kind of go along with the curve of the, you know, like the perimeter of the building. But it was very interesting. They had a cool stage, and Dan Doherty was doing some like artist demonstrations and whatnot. They had some cool toy vendors, which tomorrow is Toy Con around here, and I will be going to that very early in the morning. It's like an 8 a.m. convention, which is weird to me, but I hope I'm awake by that time. But
yeah.
No, I should be. But no, I mean, we weren't there terribly long at the convention last week. It was just kind of cool to stop by and, you know, see Tim Seeley and Mike Norton again and whatnot. I did pick up a bunch of dollar comics and a few $5 trades. I got a Rocket Raccoon hardcover for $5. That's nice. Normally $25, and a couple Ecstatics books. So that was pretty cool. Did you get anything sweet from Emerald City yesterday?
I got this limited edition Turnstile Comics issue 3, which is a Lemuria issue.
Awesome.
With an extra 7-inch and alternate art by Nation of Amanda, which is rad. I got an Emerald City Comic Con exclusive of the new Liz Prince comic that's coming out on Boom, Cody and the Creepies. I just picked up a bunch of like smaller like zines too, and got some prints by some artists who had some interest in. You know, like I said, like that's kind of what I look for. There was somebody who had a Spider-Man, I think it's Amazing 300, right? That's the McFarlane issue. Somebody had that, and I actually thought about buying it. I was like, I'm going to get ripped off.
Was it CGC graded and super expensive?
It was, but it was like graded pretty low. But it was just more of like, I've never had a physical copy of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. The way that you described the con that you went to, though, is... That's like the cons that I'm used to going to, like, and maybe it's just because that's what it was like when I was like nine and 10, and I first started really getting into comic books, like in the early 90s, is that they were all like in shitty places, like in hotels, and my favorite was like they used to have one in the shopping mall here, so that's kind of what I'm used to. So when I go to, even though I've been to a few of the Emerald City Comic Cons, like, it's still like culture shock to me.
Yeah. It's always fun seeing the huge difference between the two, you know, sizes of the conventions and everything like that. I enjoy the tiny cons. It's just that the setup for Northwest Indiana was weird. We were staying behind people online who I guess go every year, or at least last year. They're like, this wasn't like this at all last year. So many less people. There was no wait in line. So it's kind of cool, like, overhearing that. Like, yeah, maybe the wait in line kind of sucked in the freezing cold. But, I mean, it's kind of cool seeing that so many people showed up that there would be a wait, you know, to get in. That's good for the creators and everyone exhibiting at the convention. Shall we move on to books? Yo, Dave, you read Batman 18, correct?
Yes.
All right.
That's true.
Now, do you
agree with me when I say that this is the best issue of this run so far?
I'm not sure. I know in the beginning I liked the first story with Gotham and Gotham Girl and all of that, and you know, I don't know, maybe because it took a while to build up with this whole Bane thing.
It did. I mean, this issue was sort of the culmination of all the previous storyline, the I Am Suicide storyline, which I wasn't really that big of a fan of. But it's good to see a lot of those elements kind of seep back into this story. It does seem like now, after this, seeing this issue, it seems like Tom King really is telling one long Batman story, broken up into smaller arcs, where it seemed like at first maybe it was just, here's an arc, couple issues off, move on to this arc, couple issues off. But the way he's connecting everything, it seems like this is completely intentional, that he's sort of layering things in from, you know, 5-10 issues ago and whatnot. This is also probably my favorite rendition of Bane. He's not mopey naked Bane like we saw the entire last story arc either.
Yeah, he got some pants.
I know. He did. Fully clothed the Bane. But no, the storytelling in this was excellent. It was, well, essentially, before I get into like the little tricks, Bane just beats the shit out of Batman. And that's kind of where we're at. It's almost like a giant fight scene, but with flashback storytelling and It's like it's sort of like a Bruce Wayne's upbringing juxtaposed with Bane's, and seeing what they go through. And they're, you know, they both lose their parents around the same age, and how they deal with it.
Oh yeah, I remember that now.
I absolutely loved it, and it's this parallel storytelling, and it's just absolutely lovely. I know Tom King's into little tricks like that, like with what book was it? DC. He did what the hell book title was it? I can't remember. Brain farting.
The Shazam. One with
Shazam. Shazam.
Vision.
But no, Vision. It was it was the one where the team, not Metal Men. Was it Metal Men? I don't know. The team like
Bat-mite.
A duck. That was Dan Jurgens, I think. But they abducted like Kyle Rayner, just beat the crap out of him. But he did this thing where page 1 and page 22 would be the same, and then page 2 and page 21 would be the same. And it was this weirdly symmetrical storytelling as far as like layout patterns go. And looking at like double page spreads, the pages would mirror each other. It was like this really intentional, deliberate way of laying out the panels and everything. And so he's very good at tricks like that. And you could see, David Finch, the artist here, and you could see they're working together to do stuff like that. This is also some of my favorite Finch artwork.
Yeah.
It just looks really good.
The only Batman book from this run that I read was it was like the suicide note to Selina.
Okay.
But yeah, the art is great. It's I don't know, since they did the rebirth or whatever, the Batman books are like, outside of Batgirl, which is the one title that I read regularly, like they're hard to follow for me. But I think I don't know if that's a symptom of them going back and retconning and rebooting like that universe like so many times. And after a while, I mean, it's just, you know, like I like that was a standalone issue that I read where I just, you know, because I heard it was like written well.
Yeah.
So I wanted to check it out for myself.
Well, no, I think a lot of people have event fatigue when it comes to that kind of stuff and just don't want to see any more reboots. And it's like you pick up a book and it's like, oh, well, I kind of read this story, even though it's told in a different way, maybe a little more creative, maybe, you know, a little more straightforward or modern or whatever it is. And I think a lot of people might be tired of that. I know, and Dave and I talked about this on the last episode, but Tom King is catching a lot of flack, I see, on Twitter for this run. But he seems very open to hearing what people like and dislike about it. So at least with this title, he's sort of willing to understand what people want out of this book. I think that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Should I give it a chance?
I would jump on with the Catwoman issues.
Okay.
Dave, do you agree?
yeah, I think it has gotten better.
Yeah,
since the suicide note or self-harm or
I am suicide.
Is it? Yeah, that was it.
Yeah. Each story is I am something. Like, I am Gotham, I am Suicide, I am Bane. Is this one? But yeah, jump on with those Selina, the Catwoman issues. I think it's 13 and 14. Or 14, 15?
Okay. 14,
15. It's a two-issue story arc, and it's awesome. So.
All right. I'm going to do that. Actually, I'm going to check it out right now.
Excellent.
Let's see. The great thing about having devices, like having like Comixology or whatever.
It's right at your fingertips.
Exactly.
Digital.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I know. Yeah. In the beginning, I did not like the digital comics, and then I just got used to them. And now I'm just like, this makes everything so much easier.
Yeah. I lived in a much bigger place like a few months ago for a few years, and we got a smaller place over the holidays, and I was like carrying all my comics and stuff, and I was just like, man, I was like, I don't know if I could buy I've gone out and bought physical copies, but I think for the most part, like a lot of what I read monthly now is has been digital for like maybe like the last like 7 months, 8 months.
I'm slowly going that way too. I always have this sort of like internal struggle because, I mean, for one, it's just better on the environment. But, you know, if you're looking at like, you know, like I like my collections. I like my wall of trades and figures that I have and everything. But, you know, all these long boxes and everything. And I'm looking at them and, you know, Caroline and I have a baby on the way, and I have no idea where I'm going to put all my comics now because we have to move stuff out of that room. So it's, you know, it would make a lot more sense to go digital at this point for me, just, you know, taking up space and everything like that. It's very economical to do that. Plus, a lot of times you wait like a month or two, and the comics drop in price. If you don't need something, you know, if you're not a Wednesday warrior and you don't need it right away, wait a couple months. Like Image usually drops the price on Comixology by a dollar after 30 days. DC used to do a month, and now they do 2 or 3 months. They drop the price, I think.
Yeah. So. But the good part about that is, and part of why I read monthlies so infrequently, or at least sparsely, is I prefer reading the trades, like just sitting there and like one sitting and over a few days and just busting out through a story, you know.
I agree. I think when it comes to a lot of the indie titles, except for, I mean, because I'm, as far as the indie titles go, I'm really only getting a couple Image titles, Killer Be Killed and Saga, still monthly at this point. Everything else I've switched to trade, and superheroes you can read monthly and it's kind of cool. But I think they do read better in trades, but like, I think a lot of the, creator owned books just ultimately read better in trades too. And that kind of sucks because a lot of their, you know, whether the book lives or dies is based off of single issue presale, orders. So that kind of sucks for the creator, but it's like the lack of foresight on the market's fault, not really, someone choosing to trade weight. So I don't know. It's this. The buyers start feeling guilt about it, and it's, I don't know, it's stupid, but.
Way to go. Way to go, guys.
So Green Arrow 18?
Yep, Green Arrow 18.
How's it been?
Well, I mean, I followed it. The Green Arrow, since the rebirth, has been consistently good. And there might have been only, like, one issue that wasn't that great, but they brought back Roy Harper, and it was a little bit different because I think the artist is different. Still Benjamin Percy, that's
okay.
That's
the writer, right? Yeah,
yeah. But it was just when I was first reading it, I was like, this is supposed to be Oliver, but he looks different. This is weird. So it took me out of it in the beginning, but I'm sure I'll get used to it as, you know, as the issues go on.
Who was the original artist? I forget. Was it
Schmidt? Otto Schmidt?
Otto Schmidt, yes. I was absolutely in love with that artist. But it's funny just hearing a lot of people talk because I fell behind on it. I do plan on catching up still. But I caught up with Flash and everything. I plan on catching up with Green Arrow too. But a lot of the reviews I'm reading or hearing, you know, is that the change in artist is kind of hurting the book. Like when Otto Schmidt's not on the book, it doesn't feel as magical, I guess.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, I think as long as the stories are good, because I mean, look at Birds of Prey, which I've been consistent with. But if you look at that art is kind of weird. You know, it is a lot of it is not very attractive looking artwork, but
I remember not being thrilled with that art in the rebirth issue.
But it wasn't bad. I did stick with it. I mean, granted, it's not one of those books that comes out once a month, twice a month, like a lot of the other ones are. It's like the Red Hood and I think Teen Titans. Those only come out like once a month, so I guess it's easier to keep up with them.
Yeah, well, although those once a month issues now are getting jacked up $1 per issue.
Yeah, I think it's the same for the digital, isn't it?
I think so, and that kind of sucks. But like, it's weird because you think they would want to raise the price on Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, mm-hmm. Action Detective, Flash, stuff like that, and they're not, probably because those are the ones coming out, you know, twice a month. But they're starting to raise the prices on these characters that could probably use all the help they can get as far as sales go.
Hmm. Yeah, but I mean, I feel like from a business standpoint, it makes more sense to keep the big three, and I guess Arrow and like anything that has basically like a media tie to it right now, mm-hmm. to keep it at a lower price point, because you never know like who's going to discover those properties because of a movie, because of a TV show, and then they can get into the comics, and then it's more affordable than like, I don't know, fucking Plastic Man or some shit.
100%, and they're still making $6 a month off of, you know, it's two issues, but they're still making $6 a month off of Batman. Right now, the Batgirl will be $4 a month. But the only thing is, even if I feel like even if they jacked the, you know, they raised the price on the main ones, I don't know if this, you know, it might hurt new readers jumping in. I agree with that, but I don't know if it would deter any of the current readers at all. Like I'm curious to see if after they implement this price increase, if sales go down on, you know, on Batgirl or Blue Beetle or, you know, any of, you know, those other titles like that. Whereas like if that happened with Batman, I don't think, I think it would be insignificant, the drop in readership.
Yeah. Is this this is just for the print though, the price increase, right?
I thought so, but I think, Dave, you said it is for digital too, right?
I don't think it is for digital, because because I've just, all of these weekly or monthly or twice mm-hmm. monthly titles, I've just been getting them off of Comixology. So, and I think they were all $2.99 with the exception of All-Star Batman, which is like $4.99, I think.
Yeah, that's always that price every month, because they say it's because of the backup story, which is stupid, but. But that's, see, if they raise the price on print and not digital, that's going to piss a lot of retailers off. Yeah. And that's something they didn't want to do, you know, a few years ago when DC, you know, put forth the whole New 52, and they, like, part of what they were doing was day and date digital. So the day the issues came out in print, they came out digitally too, where Marvel wasn't up to that point yet, or none of the other publishers were really. And that, I remember that kind of pissed a lot of retailers off, and they think it's unfair. But you see also a lot of retailers say that digital isn't hurting them at all, because it's, you know, people check stuff out on Comixology. But he's like, you know, like a couple of the people at my shop, the shop I go to, they're like, but people want to walk in here for trades. You know, yeah. they buy the trade, so they can make the money off the trades. It's just they're probably losing money on single issues, maybe. So,
yeah, I think that's the thing that I think that's a big point that a lot of people tend to miss out these days, is that, you know, I would because yeah, it makes more sense to buy a, you know, an anthology or collected works as a physical medium than single issues. Cause you know, you can just burn through single issues on an iPad, like whatever, which is how I read all my stories. But like stuff like Paper Girls, or even like even just graphic novels, like right now I'm rebuying all the Scott Pilgrim books. Cause you know, all the color versions are out, you know, and that's stuff that, yeah. I wouldn't want to own that digitally, because you know, I love that series enough to want to have physical versions.
I think a lot of people feel that way too. And plus, like, the hardcovers are just so pretty. Like, having a hardcover on your shelf, it's just nice to look at.
Yeah. I think the other part of it too is that, you know, and I think I used to work at a video store. So you know, you want to go there for the contact, even though, you know, as Rob, you and I were talking on Facebook yesterday, some comic book fans aren't always the cleanest people. But, but you know, you want to be able to, like, have that kind of conversation with somebody. And, that I mean, that's how you find out about books, you know, like, that's, you know, me walking into my local shop is how, a few years ago, is how I found out about the Henry and Glenn Forever books.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Stuff like that.
That's very true. Like, I mean, even like larger title, like maybe not a large title, but even like just Vertigo titles or whatever. But I wouldn't have checked out Scalped, which is one of, you know, it's probably in my top 5 or 10 favorite series of all time now, if I didn't go into, you know, comic shop and say, I love Preacher, give me something, you know, as you know, along those lines, even though they're, you know, it's not a similar story, but tonally it might be the same. And but like, that's, it is this community, for better or worse. A lot of people have terrible experiences in comic book shops, but the ones in Chicago, for the most part, aside from like one of the shops here, which is god awful and I'll never step foot in again, for the most part, the shops here are great, and especially the shop I go to, Gmart, is amazing, and the people there are awesome. And they, you know, when I first moved here, Chicago, I didn't know many people, and like quickly I got to, you know, stop in the comic shop once or twice a week, and I had people to socialize with, and it was kind of cool. And I don't know, there's that sense of community that I think a lot of people will miss out on with digital. But at the same time, there are only X amount of comic book stores in this country, and some are hundreds of miles away. You know, some people live hundreds of miles away from shops, and just, that's just not an option.
Yeah, we definitely have, you know, we both live in cities where we have options paralysis for that sort of thing.
Yeah. I know back in New York, Dave, you don't have many options. I think you have a few, but they're probably not even terribly close to you.
I don't believe in leaving the indoors if I don't have to.
There you go. So we'll take that as no comic book shops around. Really quickly, I could talk about Champions. I'll keep this spoiler free in case no one's caught up. But the first half of the issue is just really fun. Issue where the team, you see the effect the team has on the world. You know, people around the world doing good deeds, building homes, cleaning up the ocean, teaching self-defense classes, stuff like that, helping people register to vote. It's just, you know, two pages of like the positive impact that they're having. Then the next maybe 8 to 10 pages are the Champions.
Oh, the paintball part.
Oh my god, so good. It reminds me of like those Claremont issues when they, you know, the baseball games.
Yes.
When it was like a breath away from the main story arc of X-Men, and the team would just play baseball, and like it was just like a silly fun issue. So the paintball game is just so much fun, but it's cool seeing the way that all of them got to think, and Nova kind of had his time to shine, because I know it seems like he has some insecurities about being on the team, and like you know Ms. Marvel and Cyclops are kind of like the leaders, and then you have
Hulk is the leader.
Hulk likes to think he's the leader, but not, and it's pretty cool. And then the next half of the issue kind of turns into the other side of the effect that the Champions have on the world, and you know, you see all the positive it has, but now some people want to capitalize off of you know, some negative things too about it. And it's that a group is called that's called the Freelancers Forms, and this should be interesting because it seems like we don't get to know these characters too much. We see that they're up to no good and kind of start messing around with homeless people. It's kind of a little fucked up what they're doing, but implant some thoughts in a couple of guys' heads. But seeing what their powers are and everything, it seems like it'll be cool to see these two teams go up against each other, and I think we get to see that next issue.
Yeah, I will say, so I started reading Champions because of you guys, because you were talking about issue 5 a couple episodes ago.
Yes, whole like where the sheriff was sort of like an analog for all of like the
America.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so usually I'm not a big fan, and I don't know if this is just a symptom of having grown up on the X-Men, and now I'm just kind of, you know, at the end, you know, in my 30s. So I'm just like, oh, do I really want to read about teenage superpowered kids? but this is probably, as far as like political slant goes, like this is like the smartest title out there I've read. And I feel it, and, you know, and I don't know, again, don't know if it's because I'm like the son of immigrants and I've been dealing with this, especially post-election, but like a lot of this hits home. And I'm really glad that, you know, that this is like I don't know how it's doing sales wise, but I hope that this is a book that Marvel keeps around for a while.
I hope so too. A lot of people seem to be loving this book. I think it's a well organized team in the sense that it's like well represented. They, you know, a lot of different people are you know, different demographics are represented here. So like you said, it hits home to you. Like there are people on this team that speak to you. And as far as it being smart politically, I'd agree. I think it's aware without being too preachy.
Yeah.
Obviously, it may have a slant to it, but it's not shoving it down your throat or anything. But you kind of see which side of the line that the champions may or may not be on.
Yeah, it's very anti-Frank Miller in that way, where I feel like he's definitely a writer who goes overboard with how he feels.
Yeah. All because of that one mugging in New York City in the 70s.
Exactly.
No, this is a great book, and I cannot stress enough to listeners to go check it out if you haven't yet. And it's just really fun seeing the way that these kids work together. And plus, I'm getting Cyclops, which, I, you know, old Cyclops is dead now, and that still bums me out. No!
Cyclops hater in the house.
Scott Summers is the best. Haters be damned. But you know, it's cool seeing. I mean, he's also in All New X-Men, and that's cool, even though he's dealing with like a broken leg. But no, it's a lot of fun, the team dynamic. So this is definitely my favorite team book at Marvel right now.
Yes, agreed. But you know, I feel like everything else that's like tied to X-Men or Avengers, I'm just kind of tired of. Just and that's more to do with like how prevalent they are in televised and film media at the moment. So it's nice to see something else that's, you know, different and relevant to my life.
Agreed. And it's funny too, because you say Avengers, like I'm kind of like Mark Waid writes Champions, and I love him as a writer, but he's also writing the current Avengers story, you know, the book for Marvel, and I can't get into it. Like I want to like it, and I love Mark Waid, but I think it may be a little bit of that that kind of fatigue because of just how all over the place they are in pop culture right now. And that being said, like I can't get enough of them in the movies and everything. You get the time in between and space out, but I can opt to read these comics. So
yeah, and I kind of feel like with the kind of writer that Mark Waid is, like you can tell when he's having fun. Like when he had that long run on Daredevil, you know, before, you know, he was on Netflix.
Yeah.
You know, you can tell that he was just having a blast writing that. And I feel like you get, like, tonally, you get that sense for Champions as well. You know, I think when you're dealing with something like Avengers, and again, you know, it's a business, like, you know, Disney has some serious money tied into that property. Like, I'm sure he, and I don't know if this is the case, this is just speculation on my part. But I'm sure, you know, he has a lot of notes coming down the pipeline about what he can and can't do.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure of it too. And especially that team, who knows if that team's going to change with the Avengers team with Thor, you know, who Thor is now, and that there's a miniseries that Jason Aaron's writing about the unworthy Thor. And, you know, who knows if Odinson's going to be able to get his powers back. And, that's very interesting though. But yes. Yeah, so Champion, any other books you guys want to talk about before we move on?
No. I don't. I only read two.
I mean, I, like I said, when we were talking about Batman, like Batgirl's pretty much like the Bat family title that I read consistently.
I still love it, and I was worried after Raphael Albuquerque left that I'd be less into the book. And I hope Larson is a writer, but I was, you know, a lot of that book was Albuquerque's art, and I just love him from his work on, you know, American Vampire and everything. But Christian Wild Goose, I think is his name. His artwork is awesome, and it fits the book perfectly too. So
it does, and I will say that I don't know if you experience this in Chicago, but the B story of Burnside becoming gentrified is something that hits super close to home for me, because I'm watching like all my favorite weirdo neighborhoods in Seattle, you know, get taken over by. And, you know, obviously it happens because like Amazon is based here, but, you know, we're having like an influx of all these people coming in from other places. And now there's like these weird boutiques where there used to be like awesome, like queer coffee shops and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So that, I think that's a huge part, you know, that again, like Champions, like that's what connects me to Batgirl, and the writing and the art is fantastic. Hands down.
I agree. I, a lot of that does happen in Chicago, too. I think a lot of it was starting to happen maybe 5 years before I even moved out here, too. So, you know, I may be riding that wave, but you know, I definitely see it happening. Less so in my neighborhood. Here on, I'm on the south side, and it seems sort of untouched. We're in, like, an artsy-fartsy neighborhood, and it's amazing. I love Bridgeport. It's like, you know, like art centers every other block and, you know, cool little... restaurants and coffee shops all over. So it like here seems pretty, you know, it's unscathed by the whole thing. But I know a lot of the north side is kind of falling victim to it, I guess. But so I do see it in the city. Ooh. But no, I agree. Batgirl has been a lot of fun, and yes, I can. I know you guys haven't seen Logan. I will talk about it briefly, spoiler free, so any listener who hasn't seen it yet, don't worry. I will start off by saying I cannot wait to see this movie again. It's that good. This is my favorite film in the X franchise, and I didn't want to say it right away because I always have that anytime I see a movie, no matter what it is, a comic book movie, I come out and I'm like, oh, I love that movie, it's the best movie ever, and then a couple days sets in and I'm like, oh, where would I rank it, you know, like the Marvel movies or whatever. Now you know, Avengers and Winter Soldier are kind of the, you know, where do I rank it compared to those? They're the high mark, and then everything else kind of falls in between, you know, underneath. But this, I wish this was the Wolverine movie that we had to begin with. And I actually just read an article. I think, I forget if it was on CBR or comicbook.com, but it said that Hugh Jackman almost quit being Wolverine after the Wolverine Origins movie, which would have sucked. But I guess Ridley Scott.
It would have made sense.
It would have made sense. But Ridley Scott kind of talked him into it. He's like, you don't understand how much. People are able to do with that character. What you know, that movie is not indicative of what the character can be about on his own. And that's amazing that because the second Wolverine movie, you know, I talked about it like, oh, I like it, but I don't watch it enough. I ended up watching it again last night because I've been on a big Wolverine kick. And I really do enjoy the Wolverine. And now watching it again after seeing Logan, you can kind of see, I'm sure it was intentional, even though it seemed like maybe they didn't have a clear direction for the third Wolverine movie at the time, but they were kind of sprinkling hints as to what the third Wolverine movie would be about. But Logan, it's absolutely incredible. It's set in the future, in the year 2029, and we see a lot has changed with mutants, the relations between mutants and humans. Any mutants that are left, that's not really a spoiler, this kind of divulges in the beginning. And it's not really futuristic, but there are a few weird things that change in the future which come into play probably halfway during the film. But it's very interesting. It's this it's a hardened Wolverine. He's a lot different. He's aged, definitely. His healing factor maybe wasn't what it once was, and he's working a specific job, and it's kind of weird seeing him in this role. It's almost comedic at first, and you see why he has this role, why he's taking that job, and he's almost like caretaker of you know, a few other people and whatnot. And you know, we get to meet X-23, which, as far as I'm concerned, she stole the show. She was the movie. This was as much her movie as it was, you know, Logan's movie. And she was incredible. The actress that played her, I can't remember her name right now. I should have pulled up IMDb. But absolutely incredible. Just the fight scenes were amazing. The way she acts, especially a lot of the movie is, and you kind of get the vibe from it in the trailers or commercials, where she may not be as open or talkative as a lot of the other characters. And for her, for such a young girl to act the way she does without saying a word, it's incredible. It's definitely, it takes cues from Old Man Logan in the sense that it does feel like a Western, like Western road trip kind of story, but that's kind of where it ends, as far as similarities to the Old Man Logan storyline. And
there's no Hulk
or Hulk clan. No, unfortunately not. But,
No Hawkeye.
Or Hawkeye clan, but no, this movie, I don't want to say too much more. I don't want to give anything away. There's some really heavy scenes. I'm not gonna lie, I made it through. Like, I was like fist pumping during some of the scenes. Like, some of the fight scenes are just absolutely brutal, and seeing the way that Logan works or X-23, you know, use their skill set and their abilities, it's just incredible. And it's different. It's a different Wolverine than we've seen before. And that comes into play in the way he fights too. But, and then I was going somewhere else with this. Oh yeah. Oh, so I made it throughout the whole movie. I was like, you know, very much into it, the edge of my seat. The last scene, it's not even the last scene. It was like the last like minute of the movie. I may have shed some tears, I'm not gonna lie, but it got intense, and it was beautiful. It's like an amazing end to what by all means should have been like a Wolverine trilogy that went nowhere because of that first movie. So
yeah, I was gonna say, like, that's, I haven't seen The Wolverine because of how crappy the Origins was.
So you need to see The Wolverine. It's definitely really good. The only thing I noticed, I will say this, is watching The Wolverine again last night, noticing some parts. You know how Days of Future Past sort of retconned a lot of the movies? Like X-3 and Wolverine Origins just don't matter anymore as far as the movie continuity goes.
Yeah.
It's sort of is the same with The Wolverine. Kind of. It's weird because you could see parts that may stick, but there are parts that, you know, maybe you could say, oh, this doesn't matter anymore a little bit. But don't let that take, you know, your enjoyment of, you know, take anything away from your enjoyment of the movie. It's still really good. I would definitely check The Wolverine out, but I would absolutely go watch Logan first.
All right. If it sucks, I'm going to be upset. I mean, The Wolverine. I mean, I'm planning on watching Logan anyway.
I think it's fine. But I know we talked about it a little bit earlier, but you guys saw the Deadpool teaser, correct?
Yeah, it's online.
Yep.
Yeah.
Thanks, Ryan Reynolds.
It was definitely funny and exciting, and I cannot wait for another Deadpool movie.
Yeah, I can't believe that I'm also excited just by virtue of the fact that even before Deadpool, the movie came out, like, I felt pretty burned out on him. You know, just so there were so many, like, Deadpool crossover titles mm-hmm. in the years leading up to the movie's release, and now there's, like, and I mean, fuck, man, like, I can't even tell you how many people I saw dressed up as Deadpool yesterday and at Comic-Con. It was insane.
Did it equal the amount of movie or DC cinematic Harley Quinns?
Oh, wow.
I would say that they're probably half and half.
Harley Quinn?
Or just as many Deadpools as I saw Harley Quinns. And Walking Dead people, of course.
Of course. Probably Rick, I'm sure.
I didn't see a lot of Ricks. I saw a lot of Carls.
Oh, probably Negan, too. I see a lot of Negans. Yeah.
Yeah.
Coral.
It was funny watching people having to check their non-spiked bats at the costume check-in place. So,
in a couple weeks here, there's I told you about this, Dave, but in a couple weeks here, there's Walker Stalker Con, which is sort of like the convention aimed for Walking Dead and, you know, the television Walking Dead and like kind of zombie culture, and the promoters who do that also do Heroes and Villains Fest or Con or whatever it's called. And they're both going on the same day out here. And my wife and I bought like cheapo tickets on Living Social. So we're getting in pretty cheap, but it's access to both conventions. So it's pretty cool. So maybe I'll get to, you know, see some of the actors from Walking Dead, even though I don't watch that show anymore. I used to like it a lot, but kind of fell off. But like almost the entire cast of Arrow and The Flash, you know, will be at this thing too. So it'd be pretty cool to check that out. All right. Well, actually, I could segue into the next part, I guess, since I brought up Arrow. shall we talk Arrow for a bit?
Let's spend 30 minutes talking about my unrequited crush on the woman who plays Felicity.
Ricketts?
I wish it was Ricketts.
See, what's funny is I had a crush on her in like the first couple seasons, and then the way they write her took that crush away.
Yeah, now you just want to crush her.
that's kind of what it is.
Like in the Big Pun way or in the Hulk way?
No, in the Hulk way.
Okay.
Hulk crush.
All right, so, oh, yeah, this was a big episode of Arrow.
Yeah. Disappointing for me.
You can go ahead and spoil it, by the way, for me. I'm going to probably go back and watch it at some point because I think I'm like 3 or 4 episodes behind right now.
This season's been my favorite for the past couple seasons, I think. I've definitely enjoyed this a lot more than last season. The last season wasn't... It just dragged on too long, but this has been great. They make a lot of interesting moves, and Dave, you want to explain why it was disappointing for you?
Well, I'm not a big fan of the fact that the reveal of Prometheus was basically they took a comic character, Adrian Chase, who was a vigilante in the comics. And the whole season we're thinking, well, he can't be Prometheus because Adrian Chase is the vigilante. So what did they do? They made Adrian Chance Prometheus, which I just feel like we've been Guggenheimed.
I was just going to say you got Guggenheim, Dave.
We got zapped. And, it's funny because I listened to another podcast, Quiver, the Green Arrow podcast, and they were talking about they're not sure if this is what the writers eventually intended, or it was just that too many people, like myself, were saying, well, Adrian Chase is the vigilante, so we already know who the vigilante is, and they changed it. And it made me think, too, because you were mentioning the other day that the vigilante voice is definitely the Adrian Chase voice.
100%. Like, that is a very distinct voice. That kind of monotone, sort of gravel, that sort of disinterested kind of voice.
Yeah. And, yes, it's...
But, honestly, this is the thing. I didn't care about the reveal because what's funny to me is I don't know if it was supposed to be an oh shit moment, but when it happened, I was like, oh, that seems kind of cool. It was like unceremonious in the reveal. At least I thought so. Although maybe I didn't get the impact because I just don't care who he is anymore. They lost me on it. But Like, I was kind of impressed, like, oh, okay, that's fine, I can roll with this. But I kind of, who are they getting one over on? You know, that, oh, people know that Adrian Chase is the vigilante. I think the average Arrow viewer probably doesn't give a crap about that. Like, or, you know, the comic history. And, like, what they did was probably just piss off a bunch of comic fans rather than, like, try to do something sneaky and slick. It didn't make sense to, like, it. I mean, I guess it kind of made sense that Adrian Chase is Prometheus. But because I kind of had that feeling in the beginning, and then I was kind of hoping it was other people, and then it was like, I just don't, just reveal it. I don't care. But but like, who are you? Like, really? It's not.
It was a mistake because it was the obvious choice, which is what makes you steer away from it. You're like, nah, this guy is too. He's the obvious guy. He's in the inner circle, and he's like the mayor's aide and everything. And I don't know. In my opinion, if it's anybody other than Tommy, then it was a blown opportunity because you brought in Flashpoint and they have all these possibilities and that's what you do with it. It's just completely let down.
I wonder if this is like a goof because of Flashpoint. Like, once Flashpoint gets fixed and Diggle has the, you know, has a daughter, not a son, or son, not a, I forget who, I lose track, but you know, when everything gets reverted back to the way it should be, I wonder if Adrian Chase is going to end up being Vigilante and then Prometheus is Tommy. And it's like, what just happened? They could do something stupid like that too.
I feel like they're not smart enough to do something like that.
I mean, I think if they did that, they would piss people off way more than having Adrian Chase be Prometheus. I feel like that kind of reveal, you know, from like from a TV standpoint, you know, that makes a little bit more sense. And then you have, you know, people will get used to it eventually as the season progresses.
Yeah.
But then, you know, like retconning that again. you're just asking people to shit on you.
Well, it's funny too because they made, you know, they do the whole Flashpoint thing where Barry sort of fixes the timeline except for Diggle's child, but then Diggle, you know, Diggle's family has been off screen this entire season for the most part. Yeah. So we don't get to see the fucked up effects of Flashpoint now come into play too, which is like, I'm that's what I'm still hung up on. I want to see that get fixed. Like, that's where I lie with the show. But
I mean, I'm going to be straight up with you guys. Like, them introducing Flashpoint into the DC TV universe is why I stopped watching The Flash. Because I kind of felt like it was too soon. Like the show was still new. And to bring something like heavy like that, and I guess as far as like long-term storytelling, it makes sense because then they got to tie in Legends of Tomorrow and Supergirl eventually. But it kind of like made me not want to watch Flash.
I get that. I well, for me, it was different because it made me want to watch Flash until they weren't fixing anything from it. Like there was still some fallout from Flashpoint that they weren't addressing, it seemed like. And I didn't know if it was just because the season is so long or it's lazy and they want to tell these other stories or what the case was, but I was getting impatient with that. So, I mean, Flashpoint essentially made me stop watching Flash too, but for a different, like, I was excited about it at first. And then it kind of like grew old with me. And like last season I was kind of in and out with Flash anyway, and I was sort of hoping to get back into it. Because it's funny, especially after, I wonder if I liked Arrow any less this season, if I'd be more inclined to watch Flashpoint or Flash, excuse me. But because I'm actually enjoying Arrow a lot more than I did in the past season or two, I'm kind of content with that being my DC show, and, you know, as well as Supergirl. But I don't know. The whole thing with Arrow, though, is interesting. I mean, I know you're upset with it, Dave, but at least like next week, it might make for a decent story because Adrian Chase at the end of the episode abducts the, what's the reporter's name? I could never
Susan
forget.
Susan or something?
Never remember her name. Susan. Yeah. So he meets up with Susan. Is like, I have an exclusive, and she's like, nah. He's like, guess what? Abducted. So
yeah, that's not that. How I thought it was gonna. I thought it was gonna be revealed that she was working with them.
That's what I thought too, and especially the whole thing with her is insane to me. Because for one, I told you this, Dave, too, but there's in Ed Brubaker's Batman, there's like a very similar story where a reporter knew the identity of Batman. Only her computer got hacked and everything, but she ended up dying. So I was like, I wonder if they're kind of like, I mean, this is like a generic story that they could be telling, or if I wonder how much they're actually lifting from Brubaker's Batman run, since this is essentially a Batman story anyway. So I was kind of curious with that, but you know, they're making this whole thing out to be so bizarre with Ollie being upset with Thea and Felicity because they got Susan. Why can I not remember her name? Susan fired, and and you know, she's pissed at Ollie, understandably, but she also is like, I have your secret and I can't even do anything with it. I can't go out and tell the public. No one will believe me. Like, you're, that's not, how is that supposed to make him feel better? Like, I know your secret, but I could out you, but I can't out you because of circumstance. But, you know, they end up patching things up, and it turns out that she isn't going to go public with it. And I was like, well, that, the whole thing seemed wasteful, I guess, with her getting fired.
They were stringing us, the writers were stringing us along to think that this episode, Oliver was going to admit he was the Green Arrow to the public.
That's very true, because he holds the press conference.
That's what I thought he was going to do, and I was like, another missed opportunity.
That's true. The him being on trial for impeachment was awesome. Like, I thought that was a great, you know, a great little story. That it's interesting how they nipped it in the bud like halfway through the episode too. They're like, here's what could turn into be this entire season changing event, and you know, it sort of gets nipped in the bud right away, and it's kind of cool. But because of the trial, certain things come to light. You know, that Chase and Ollie were covering up for the Green Arrow, but everyone's wondering why. He has to throw someone under the bus to make a press conference to kind of quell the situation. So he ends up throwing the Green Arrow under the bus. It was the perfect opportunity for him to come clean, saying that he was the Green Arrow. But then, you know, then he absolutely would get impeached. You know, what would happen then? But yeah, you're right. It was the writers kind of stringing us along. I didn't think he was going to come out with it, but I think it would have been a ballsy move. You know, it'd be an interesting choice if they went that way.
I feel like I have a lot to catch up on now.
There was a lot that happened in this episode. It was actually one of the most pivotal episodes of the season, I think.
Well, I guess Now the rest of my weekend is spoken for, apparently.
No, this one was good. What happened last episode, Dave? Do you remember?
That was the one where that was after the gun control episode.
Yeah,
it was one after that one, and I think pretty much, that's the one where it was found out that Oliver was hiding that Green Arrow killed the Malone guy.
Okay, yes.
Or that, that the Green Arrow was, and they knew about it, but they were covering it up.
That's right. Oh, that's right. There was also some, a big reveal with Felicity and a choice that she makes in this episode, too, where she's going to
join those hackers.
Yep, she's teaming up with the hackers. So now she's going to be on two teams, possibly with the same end goal, but with completely different ways of approaching it. So I wonder how this is going to come into conflict with her her being on Team Arrow and whatnot. I feel like they're going to end up at war at some point. She's going to be stuck in the middle of it. It only makes sense for them to go in that direction.
Yeah, I've heard rumors that she's going to turn bad or something like that.
That makes sense, though, because, I mean, throughout the years, they've hinted at it when she was in college and, you know, Goth Felicity, you know, I mean, it was kind of silly and lame, but like how they hinted at her being this, you know, anarchist hacker and everything. And, that she is this you know, other side to her besides the really quirky, quippy, you know, smart computer nerd. So
if I don't know. I mean, I haven't seen that episode of Arrow because I just season five is just when I've gotten back into it because it's become more grounded back into how it was the first two seasons. But if I want to see a hacker like that, man, I'll just watch the first season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
it's interesting to see what direction they can go. I think I will say this, after she was completely insufferable, and I think there was no lack of complaints from both Dave and myself last season during on the podcast of how just terrible Felicity was as a character. It was like so bad, and it wasn't, I think the writers just had no idea what to do with her when they put, you know, when her and Ollie were in a relationship and engaged and everything, but it was just so terrible. Like, I feel like they have to do something extreme with her to either one, make us still forget about what happened. Because every now, like even on the episode this week, they alluded to their past relationship and whatnot. But I think also just to make up for just the way they were like, all right, we do know how to write her. We can write females again or some, I don't know, but like, it was just, they didn't know how to write women in relationships. I felt like, and she got the shit end of that stick, but I feel like going extreme with her is, it kind of makes sense. So.
Yeah. What was interesting is, cause I watched those like, Stephen Amell does these Facebook Live things, and he was talking about, how, you know, I guess fans are criticizing Oliver or whatever, and he's going through the various points or whatever. Like, I guess some, because whatever he does, fans get mad at him. I guess people are mad now because he sided with Susan over Felicity and Thea. And what was
it was annoying. I was annoyed by it, but I'm not gonna tweet at him about it.
But it was just funny because he was saying, like, he was saying that last season, when he had, Felicity definitely, you know, was in the right for how she treated Oliver. And I'm like, I responded, I was like, I disagree. He was in an impossible situation. I didn't get into this whole argument with him, but I just thought that was completely absurd. Because, like, last season, Felicity was just completely irrational. She was just like, I don't like you telling the truth about this son that you only knew you had 5 seconds ago. And it was just, I just, like you were saying, it just, it did come across as like, yeah, they don't know how to, they just think women are just completely irrational and are crazy.
It's bizarre, and not to say that I think Oliver was right either, but like you said, he's an impossible situation. Like, I don't know if there's a clear right or wrong, but I understand the way he handled it. I don't understand the way that Felicity's character reacted to anything.
His mistress just told him, it's like, if you tell anybody about this child that you just found out literally 2 seconds ago, I'm not going to allow you to see him anymore.
I know. It's funny too, because a few minutes ago that popped in my head, and I was like, I want to see his son come into play again.
Oh yeah, that's interesting. That was another thing with the Facebook Live thing he did, because I was thinking about like all of this stuff that happened with him and Felicity, and now it's like he doesn't even see his son anymore. But apparently, he was saying that in the next episode they're going to mention his son.
Ooh. You know what I hope they do is, they age the son like they did an angel. And so suddenly Oliver has a teenage son who was in hell for a few years and he didn't know.
Guggenheim can learn a thing or two from Whedon, so I would be inclined to agree.
No, I mean, I think if they did that, then Legends of Tomorrow would probably be the better show.
And Dave, well, you're not watching Legends anymore, right?
Nah. One time I watched it just because the TV was on after the Flash was on.
It just happened.
And it's funny, too, because it's like, I wasn't not even in a real hurry to watch The Flash, because it was like, ah, it's going to be another one of those, like, ah, Barry's whining, and then they have to give him this pep talk and everything. And so I wasn't that crazy about watching it, but I think halfway I just had the TV on, and then it just started ending up, and it was a weird episode, because for some reason they had to, like, they had to save George Lucas from dropping out of film school reason.
What?
Yeah, it was a very absurd episode.
This is the one thing about Legends, that from the two episodes that I watched of that show, they are obsessed with Star Wars on that show.
Yeah, that's
which
what
is
that was
funny
all about.
Because it's a Marvel or it's a Disney property, which is Marvel.
Yeah.
So it's very bizarre. Although, speaking of crossover stuff, I could talk about, I forgot about Archie this week. In Archie's bedroom, oddly enough, there were 4 DC Comics posters. Even though Archie is its own publication, there were no, I mean, it'd be weird to see an Archie Comics poster on the...
Do you think that's more of like the CW having that relationship with DC?
100%. I think CW's like, we'll allow another publisher to air a show, but they need to pimp our wares.
Yeah. I think it would have been better if Archie had like a Dance Gavin Dance poster. I haven't seen Riverdale. I was told today that it's a show that I need to check out, so it's going on my watch list.
It's I'll explain it to you how I explained it on here before. It's Twin Peaks meets Dawson's Creek, and that description you might either love it or hate it, but that's essentially what the show is.
Well, I'm a big fan of one of those shows, and the real answer would surprise you, or maybe not.
Well, I'm a fan of both of those shows, so.
Oh, I don't like Twin Peaks. I love Dawson's Creek, but Twin Peaks is not my thing.
It I think it's too weird for a lot of people, but
yeah.
But no, it's this whole murder mystery thing in Riverdale that's the Twin Peaks vibe, and tonally it's kind of weird. But they have the sappy teen drama that Dawson's Creek, you know, nailed. So it kind of falls in between. I mean, it's not as good as either show. I'm enjoying Archie. I can't even say that it's a good show. I don't even know if it is, but I'm enjoying it.
Well, I mean, and with that description in mind,
Riverdale, excuse me.
Where would you put it compared to something like Veronica Mars?
Veronica Mars is better.
Okay. That's the standard bearer for teen crime dramas.
That's also that might not be fair though, because Kristen Bell makes anything better though.
Yeah, okay. I'm not going to dispute that. I can't.
Yeah.
I can't.
Dave, you haven't checked out Riverdale, right?
No, I have not.
I don't think you'd enjoy it. Again, I don't even know sometimes if I enjoy it, but I'm just like captivated that I have to watch it.
What happens like, is the Flash is on, so you just leave the TV.
I'm still waiting for the iZombie Riverdale crossover. So now that
that's got to be a thing.
That would be cool. I can't wait for iZombie to return, which is coming back, I think, next month.
That's a show that I started watching season one, and I was like, all right, this is all right, it's fine, whatever. And then my kid got really into it, so she's like an iZombie super fan.
It's so much fun, and it's nothing like the comics at all, really. And I like that. I enjoy that it's not at all like the comics, because I enjoy both properties in different ways, so it's a lot of fun. But I will say one thing. I believe I told you about this, Dave, but when the character that plays, oh God, what's his name? Major. The character that plays Major on iZombie made an appearance on Powerless. And I was like, oh, this is cool. Are they connecting the universes? And then it turned out that he was not Major on Powerless. He ended up, he was just a henchman, like one of the Riddler's henchmen. And I was like, oh, that would have been a cool opportunity for them to connect the universes, but they did not.
Why would they do that? That makes no sense. No, I'm just messing with you. Yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff that you know, if they aligned it right, you know, like television comics properties on TV could be better than the movies. But I don't know. There's, yeah, it's weird.
Well, even with you know, my lack of enthusiasm towards The Flash, I still think it's better than the DC movies right now. So I think DC is getting television right. And Marvel is with Netflix, but like, I don't know, you know, I haven't watched Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. since the first season, so I don't know.
Yeah.
How it's been, but.
No, it's the same here. I kind of lost interest. And Agent Carter was cool, but that show didn't really stay on. And
I only caught a few episodes, and I did enjoy what I watched.
Yeah. I feel like I'm in the small minority of people who have liked the DC movies so far. Well, Man of Steel, not really, but I liked Batman versus Superman. I liked Suicide Squad, but I also went into those movies with very, 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 very low expectations. And it was more from the perspective of me being a little kid and just watching things blow up. I was like, oh, explodey, this is fun.
Like a Michael Bay movie.
Exactly. It's, you know, like I remember, I have very fond memories of the first Michael Bay Transformers movie. And then I watched it not too long ago, and then I got rid of the DVD. I donated it the next day to Goodwill.
That's one of those movies that I remember I came out of the theater and I was like, I enjoyed that. And then, like, as you're thinking about it, you like it less and less. And by like the third day after I saw Transformers, I was like, I fucking hate that movie. Why did I pay to see that? Why did I pay to see that? And it's like, I think like all Michael Bay films, like, plot is a 0 out of 10, but visually it's a 10 out of 10. Like, his visuals are always awesome. They're never not great. But like, if you go into a movie of his wanting that, then you're going to get that. But I mean, there's nothing of substance otherwise in his movies, I think.
Yeah.
Or most of his movies, but.
Yeah. Well, you try to, you know, he tried to make a movie with substance, and it was still like, it was like the Entourage of movies before they made the Entourage movie. Talking about Pain and Gain.
What was it? He did Bad Boys, right?
Yeah, he did Bad Boys.
Like, that was good. That was fine, that movie. I don't want to see him do properties of, you know, things I loved when I was a kid. No Transformers, yeah. No Ninja Turtles.
And that's what he does.
Yeah, that's all he does now.
Well, that's the big moneymaker is like those franchises. And I mean, that's why, you know, we're seeing like the possibility of He-Man and Thundercats being adapted into film again and all that stuff.
I don't. That.
Everything is a shared universe now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it Revolution? The Revolution tie-ins. Was it Mask? Transformers. Who else is on that? You guys? Rom.
Rom, yes. Which they just started the Rom comic a few months ago again.
Yeah.
Rom. So. Ick.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of feel like everything is. As far as like the major publishers go, like everything is kind of being angled to become a shared universe that they can adapt into some other medium.
Yeah, they're doing that with the, I think they want to do that with those like old monsters like Frankenstein. And I know they're doing that with Godzilla and King Kong.
All the Universal monsters.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, that's awesome though. I like that shit. I like the idea of that. That's,
but they already did that with Monster Squad in the 80s.
And they perfected it with Monster Squad. But
it's all because of Marvel now, you know.
Goddamn Marvel.
See, Marvel does something right, and everyone wants to copy the formula, but they can't quite, like, their math is off somehow.
No, yeah, it's a hard thing to replicate, because I feel like they've taken time to do it. And it's weird to think about, Iron Man was like 10 years ago, because it still seems like a new movie to me.
Well, like Dave said last episode, too, like, Marvel Studios is in the business of solely making Marvel movies, where you have Warner Brothers, who they have their hands in so many different franchises and properties and everything. So, like, I think maybe that's why the DC movies suffer in a way that the Marvel movies don't, too. You don't have that dedication and focus, maybe, necessarily, that you have from Marvel Studios.
Well, the DC movies, they wanted to make it like... I mean, Warner Brothers is director-driven, and Marvel is producer-driven, mm-hmm. and that could be part of their problem. I think what they're planning on doing, you know, in the case of, like, Aquaman, it was said that James Wan only agreed because he wanted creative control, and Matt Reeves, I think he walked out because he wasn't going to get the amount of control, but Warner Brothers relented, so there's probably going to be, you know, maybe a rethinking of, like, well, we need to make these exactly completely tied together and just try to make good movies.
Yeah, and I think that was, like, Ben Affleck's initial, like, that's what he was saying when he was doing press for his other movie that flopped. It was, you know, reverse engineering movies is not a sound way to create a franchise and B, like, even a good movie, because you're stuffing, you know, 100 pounds of shit in a 50 pound bag.
It does seem very confining, where, like, Aquaman, you can get away with that, where, you know, James Wan can get away with that because he hasn't appeared. I mean, you had the Aquaman sequence or whatever, or reference in BVS. But other than that, like, he hasn't appeared in the DC, you know, cinematic universe.
Well, he'll be CDU. In Justice League.
Yeah, he will be in Justice League. But, like, even then, like, Justice League hasn't come out yet, so we don't have expectations of what Aquaman needs to be yet.
And a lot of the teasers, and the teaser that we saw, like, the core of the team so far that we know of is going to be Wonder Woman, Batman, Cyborg, and Flash.
Yes. And that, well, who? No one else is going to be in the movie, right? Superman, but then...
Well, I hope it's Mullet Superman.
He's going to wear a black suit.
The black suit and the mullet.
Bring on Dan Juergens as a consultant and you know Superman will happen. But what other heroes are going to be part of Justice League? That's really it, though, right?
There is a rumor that by the end of the film, they're going to tease Green Lantern.
Oh, my God, please. Please. And are they going to go with John Stewart Green Lantern? Is that what you're hearing?
Or? I hear different things. I've heard rumors of, like, them casting a John Stewart. But I don't know. I think if you're going with the Justice League, I would think that you would go with Hal Jordan.
I agree, but I don't know if they're going to want to after the Green Lantern film. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I know that they're aiming for the Green Lantern core. So, I mean, eventually there'll be a Jon Stewart and probably like a Kyle Rayner as well.
I wonder if they would do Kyle Rayner instead of...
the worst Green Lantern. No. I like Guy Gardner more than I like Kyle Rayner.
You know what? I like Kyle Rayner. I think he suffers from poor timing of when he was created. I think he's an awesome character. I think no one wanted to see him around at that, like, when he was created, though. Like, I don't know. But Guy Gardner as a Red Lantern on Justice League.
Amazing. Did you guys see the Aquaman test footage that went up on, I think it was like on Snyder's Instagram or on his Twitter a couple days ago?
I did see that.
What did you guys think? It looks interesting.
Yeah. It seemed cool.
I actually did not see the test footage. How long was it? Probably like a minute long?
Maybe shorter than that.
Not even?
Yeah, yeah, it was very brief. He was in the water, though.
Yeah.
Was he?
Yep.
Awesome.
He's just kind of like floating.
I wonder, and this is wishful thinking on my part, but I wonder if there's a version of that they're going to show, because Jason Momoa is at Emerald City Comic Con right now.
Oh, awesome.
So I wonder if, and you know, like they periodically do the Facebook Live like 20-minute Q&As, and I'm sure he probably has one scheduled. So I wonder if they would show that during his appearance, like either today or tomorrow.
I wonder if they'll show that or even a little bit more. Although I'm sure they're holding everything off until San Diego.
Yeah, the bigger the granddaddy of them all.
You think when we're gonna get the Justice League trailer?
I think that's what. You know what's funny about that is during Logan, when the trailer started, I was like, wouldn't it be something if they dropped the Justice League trailer right now and like no one knew about it? They didn't say single thing, and they didn't. Because I got myself excited over something that I just created in my own head, and then was disappointed immediately when it didn't happen. So
how would you have felt if they dropped a new Wonder Woman trailer though?
I'd be fucking thrilled because I cannot wait for that movie. That I think that movie looks great, or the trailers look great. So,
yeah,
I was very surprised though because, like, this would have been a perfect chance for them to put that trailer in, even if people have seen it before. But I think San Diego, we're gonna definitely see Justice League trailer, and maybe we'll get some more Aquaman clips, but I can't if they're holding off this long for Justice League, I'm gonna venture to say San Diego is when they're dropping some trailers.
Yeah, because I keep on hearing that it's coming soon, like they'll say, like Zack Snyder says, oh, the Justice League trailer is coming soon, and just wondering when that's gonna happen.
How soon is soon?
Yeah. I don't know. A lot of it could tie in with the whole, like, well, I guess now Batman has a director, you know, with Matt Reeves, but it could be tied into that whole thing of, like, this uncertainty.
Well, since we're on news now, I guess we can kind of roll with it, too. But since you brought up, like, the Matt Reeves thing and how he's back, is Ben Affleck still Batman?
He is, for the time being.
That's what I'm worried about. I feel like any day he's going to drop out of it.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I mean, I'm of the mindset that for all we know right now that he's out of it, but they are waiting further down the line, like maybe after Justice League is released, because that's November, and if like the star of your whole universe doesn't have faith in the movies, like, what makes people want to see Wonder Woman and Justice League? Especially, he's supposed to cameo in Wonder Woman.
True, true.
Yeah. I think if the paycheck is right, he'll probably stay on.
Well, he may not have a choice, if depending on his contract.
That's true.
That's true.
That's true. I enjoy him as Batman and Bruce Wayne. Like, would like to see him stick around. I was very much looking forward to a Ben Affleck directed Batman. That was sort of what was getting me jazzed about, you know, the cinematic universe and everything. But yeah. I mean, if he's still involved, I'm cool. And I like Matt Reeves as a director.
Yeah, I feel like Matt Reeves his ability to make movies that glower, that it could glower as much as Affleck's movies can. So I think. He's more than a capable replacement, in my opinion.
I agree. Can't wait to see what, you know, 100-foot monster we get to see in
we get Man Bat for the Batman.
That would be interesting.
Kurt Langstrom.
Yeah, I mean, they're already using Ra's al Ghul in Gotham, so give us something different for the movie. Give us Man Bat.
Well, I mean, you bring that up, and it's funny too, because the DC's or Warner Brothers is tapping more Game of Thrones talent to join them in their properties, I guess. Because what's his name? He was on Game of Thrones. That's his name. I'm looking it up right now. Alexander Siddig. And yeah, he was on Game of Thrones for a while. I just got, like, it's weird. I don't watch Gotham. Dave loves Gotham, but
that is incorrect.
What I will actually, would you watch Gotham that Senor El Ghul is now making an appearance?
I think they just keep releasing more Batman villains, and I think it's just silly because what is he like 15 or 16 at this point on the show? This show is against my Batman sensibilities because the villains are a response to Batman. It's not the other way around, and it's just I don't know. I'd be interested.
To be fair, this is the only villain that makes sense to come before Batman.
Yeah, that is true. And plus, he's immortal, so he could be any age, and it won't matter. He's going to look the same. But yeah. I don't know. We've seen Ra's al Ghul on Arrow and Batman Begins, and I don't know. I just feel like he's wasted on like a show like Gotham.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I might check it out for 5 seconds just to see, and then just turn away.
I mean, do you feel like Gotham wouldn't do the character as much justice as he was presented in Arrow? I'm not like trying to pick a fight here. I'm just curious to kind of get your perspective on that.
Well, I don't even know if I was a huge fan of him on Arrow. Like, it was cool seeing him appear on Arrow. But yeah. I don't even know if I was like a fan of that characterization, really. It made for an interesting storyline, but I mean, essentially, yes, you could play around with these villains, but he is Batman's villain, not Arrow's villain.
Yeah, that's true. And that's around the time when I was like, fuck Arrow.
It was weird with Oliver dying and then not dying.
Yeah, and I was just like, I mean, they should have just, if they just kept it generic League of Assassins, I think it would have been better. But they did what they did.
Well, I kind of know with this storyline, apparently, I guess this is kind of a spoiler. I mean, I don't watch Gotham, but from what I'm hearing is that apparently on Gotham, like, they've been teasing Ra's al Ghul, and he's behind the Court of Owls, is what I'm hearing.
That's what I'm reading right now. I'm on Variety.com and reading that. Here it says, as Bruce pulls the veil off the Court of Owls, he learns the man pulling the strings is in fact Ra's al Ghul, a man shrouded in mystery and the leader of the international criminal organization, the League of Shadows. So they're doing the League of Shadows, not assassins on this.
Okay, so Shadows. Okay.
Interesting.
Because yes, Arrow is all League of Assassins.
Yes. Like which Sarah, is the way it should be.
Missa, and I don't know. That's interesting, though, because, yeah, I don't know if Arrow had the best interpretation of him. I think I was just excited at the thought of him being there. True. I thought it was cool. But, yeah, I don't know. And Arrow was kind of interesting with the fact that it was just like, oh, you can be our Ra's al Ghul, and you could be Ra's al Ghul, or whatever.
That's true, because technically Ollie was. Yeah. Right, wasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, he was, and then and then what did he give it to Nyssa? Wait, no, and then he chopped off Merlin's hand.
Yeah.
So he could give Nyssa the ring, and she just disbanded the whole thing.
Didn't they plug up, like, aren't all of the Lazarus pits all over inactive, too? Didn't they do something in the show to...
Well, when they brought Sarah back from the dead, I think Nyssa got pissed off, and she just, like, ruined the pit.
Good.
But
she peed it. She peed in it.
Yeah.
It turned purple, like in Pete and Pete.
Yeah. But...
It's a deep cut. It's a deep reference.
But I don't know. I'm of the mindset that they could always, if they want to bring the pits back, they can. Because, you know, there can always be multiple pits.
That's fair, but I love the fact that the pits are around, but I hate it too because literally anyone could just come back to life. Jason Todd will make an appearance in Arrow.
Hopefully as the Red Hood. And as a, like, you know, like the red, like bad Red Hood, not, you know, anti-hero Red Hood.
True.
Sweet.
Well, other DC news, Nightwing movie, ?
Yeah. I'm hearing I think it's the guy from Lego Batman.
Yeah.
He's supposed to do it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I don't know who do you guys think should be, I'm assuming it's going to be Dick Grayson because, you know, Nightwing, but
yeah,
it would have to be unless DC wants to do something stupid and make it not make sense. But
yeah. I know that this has been brought up online already. But I'd want to get your guys' take on it. The hot take is that how does this fit into the DC extended universe? Because we assume that the dead Robin in the Batcave belongs to Jason Todd, possibly Tim Drake, but more likely Jason Todd. But they never really that's never really explained in Batman versus Superman. It's just kind of hinted at.
Yeah, that was one of the things that it upset me about that. When I was watching it, I was like, they got to explain this. And
that's the thing. It was beyond an Easter egg when it's in the movie for, you know, as like prominent as it was.
And the trailers.
Exactly. Like that's beyond, you know, fan service and an Easter egg. I think the way they definitely need to explain that. I think the way they could get away with Nightwing not making an appearance yet or really not being talked about is he's in Bloodhaven. Maybe he's a cop. And then he comes back to Gotham for some reason.
I mean, getting back to the whole, like, which Robin is it that's, you know, which is the dead Robin? I'm of the belief it's Jason Todd. Because, what do you call... They had, these studio tours in Burbank. The WB tours. And I think it was online, like, the tour guide was saying, like, oh, this is the costume for the dead Robin, Jason Todd, and he actually said Jason Todd. And then they took it down shortly after that. Everybody was making a big deal about that. Like, oh, it's confirmed now, it's Jason Todd. I think it's going back to missed opportunities, I think it's a missed opportunity if they have, you know... Well, I guess since they're having this Nightwing movie, it can't be Dick Grayson. But I never thought it should be or it would be Dick Grayson. I know I was hearing a lot of the times, like, oh, the audiences aren't, like, knowledgeable enough. They're not going to be able to understand that there was more than one Robin. But I don't think so. I think it could be explained very quickly, you know, that there was one Robin, and then he got older and he became Nightwing, and then they took in a new Robin, and then he got killed. I don't think it's that complex.
Hang on, two things. One, from everything you just said, one, it sounds like a studio tour guide has more understanding of the of the DC universe than Zack Snyder does. And then two,
quite possibly,
they're worried about fans not understanding that there are multiple Robins. They're completely cool with changing Superman's character entirely, turning him into a character that no one recognizes, other than the fact that snapping necks, friggin' Zod murderer. Like they're cool with turning him like to Injustice Superman, you know, like beyond Kingdom Come Superman kind of you know, the way he is, but they're worried that people won't understand that there are multiple Robins. I feel like this is only an issue because of how closely, how close in time the Batman movies are, you know, like the current Batman films are compared to, in reference to the, Nolan films.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But like, I don't, that's also talking down to your, to the moviegoers saying, oh, you wouldn't get it, you wouldn't understand.
Yeah.
How about you write a complete story and explain it?
You're asking too much.
Just take 2 minutes to explain it. Oh, there was a Robin, not anymore. There was another Robin. He tried stealing my tires. Now he's dead.
What if it was Stephanie Brown? What if they that was the dead Robin?
I think people would be pissed off that they got gypped out of seeing a
Jason Todd.
Yeah, like a Stephanie Brown Robin, or you know, on the big screen or anything.
That's true. I'm not a big Stephanie Brown fan, so.
I would like to see her. I think I would like to see her more than Jason Todd, but that being said, I really just want to see, like, Jason Todd get beat up with a crowbar.
Yeah, they got to do that.
They have to.
By Jared Leto's Joker? Yeah.
Oh, God, no.
That'd be even better.
Ugh. You know, I was feeling good about DC for a moment. Forgetting that Jared,
forgot.
That Jared Leto was a part of this.
That happened.
I'm sure there's a way to retcon that. Like, they could just be like, he was a fake Joker. And there's like a... It'll be like the Mandarin in the Marvel movies.
Well, that was part of the rumors I remember. Everybody was saying, like, because he had the tattoo J on his cheek, that he's actually Jason Todd, and he's not the real Joker. That was a rumor, too.
That would be worse, because then he'd be around even more, I think. Because then he has even more history with Batman. I mean, it'd be kind of an interesting reveal, but also Jared Leto, so...
that guy just can't catch a break.
poor Jared Leto.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be in what? There was a rumor I heard about that. This is
Tron.
Tron. Okay, oh, that's what it was. No, I'll pass on that. I think
he can have that.
Yeah.
I actually heard. Oh, sorry.
Oh no! Go ahead.
Fun fact: I actually heard that Jared Leto he tried out for Doctor Strange at one point.
Oh my God.
We dodged a bullet there.
We did. There are only two things that I like Jared Leto in.
Fight Club?
Yes, because he gets the shit kicked out of him.
And you like him in when he gets killed in that...
Rec Room for a Dream?
Maybe, but I was thinking of... American Psycho, right?
Oh my God, yes. Okay, three things I enjoy him in. Those two I forgot. The death scene in American Psycho, him getting beat up like four times in Fight Club, and I actually did enjoy his character on My So-Called Life.
So. Oh yeah, he was a character on that show.
Jordan.
Yeah, that was like the only good role he ever had, and then he's like, let me just suck as an actor from now on. Like...
And as a musician, don't forget that.
And as a musician, and as a vegan, terrible vegan.
He's a vegan too.
He's not. He says he is. He's not.
Wait, what?
He's like, all animal rights, and then he eats chicken. He's like, well, I eat chicken sometimes, but I'm vegan. You are or you're not. This is...
Yeah, it's a pretty straightforward, like, you know, and he wears leather.
I don't.
That's not very vegan,
dude. You're not gonna do that. That's fine, but don't that.
I think he's confused what about, like, the meanings of words.
Maybe he'll run for president someday. Oh, God.
I could see that happening. But
I would
under, like, Joker face paint.
Yes, I was going to say I would vote for him if he was dressed as the Joker.
Vote for Mr. J. Has there been any other headway on the Harley Quinn solo movie?
The Sirens?
Yeah, or not even solo movie, because it's Gotham City Sirens, so.
Is that what it turned into?
I think so, yeah.
Like, initially... I
really kept up on this, so... Like, I know of it, but I don't know, like, are they focusing... So I know Harley Quinn is going to be a major player in it, but have they revealed who the other Sirens in question are?
From what I hear, it's Poison Ivy.
And Catwoman, I think.
And Catwoman, which would make sense. Yeah. But I've said it before, I'll say it again. Like, the only way I want to see this movie, if like Margot Robbie is going to produce it, I have a little more faith. Get David Ayer away as far from this movie as you can.
But and he's get directing.
And get Paul Dini to write this film, because Man.
He understands those characters. Cause,
he does. Yeah. The whole creating Harley Quinn thing.
Yeah.
It's a positive. But, like, I mean, yeah, but you're right. He wrote all three of them together in the series Gotham City Sirens, so he understands them really well. Like, I love that dynamic that he understands it. He gets it. But,
yeah. I mean, I kind of hope that it would be something along the lines of, like, a Charlie's Angels. I mean, and maybe, and, you know, just like this, like a darker spectacle in that way.
Mm-hmm.
That McGee did those movies. Just because I feel like those characters deserve that and not have it be as, you know, morose as Batman versus Superman.
True, true. I don't know. I feel like there's a lot that can go wrong with, like, we've seen Harley team up with people in Suicide Squad. And mm-hmm. she was like the shining star of that movie, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I'd like to see a Deadshot movie.
I'd be interested in that. But again, I don't want to see David Ayer really have anything to do with that. But I don't know, after the Oscars, you know, they could put Oscar winning Suicide Squad on, you know, they could promote that. So,
oh dear.
I remember watching that and I cringed and I was like, oh, this is not good news right now, because I know you didn't hate the movie, Dave, but
A Suicide Squad?
Yeah. You were less upset with it than I was.
We'll say that. Yeah, I mean, I only saw it once. I didn't see the extra extended version or whatever. I didn't get the home release, but I think when I saw it, and I think a lot of people, they just didn't like the villain. And I think even David Ayer said if he could do it again, he just would have made Joker the villain.
It would make sense, because the villain was weak.
Yeah. Agreed. I feel like there should have been more Jai Courtney in the movie.
Yes! Yes! Oh, man, that was one of my favorite parts, was the boomerang.
Maybe we'll get a boomerang solo film.
I, you know, honestly, I would be content if he just did, like, web shorts. Because I feel like he would be good in, like, 10-minute increments. Because I think a whole Captain Boomerang movie, unless you did it like Deadpool, where it is more of a comedy than an action movie or a comic movie.
I think you can get away with that with, like, Harley and with Jai Courtney, and even maybe with Will Smith, like the way he portrayed Deadshot. You could probably get away with it with, like, those three characters. But I just remember the scene that sticks with me was when Boomerang quit the team, and then the very next scene he was standing with them like nothing happened.
Yeah.
So, man, Doctor Strange, I can't believe that.
Jared Leto is Doctor Strange.
Yeah. I can't even imagine that, but
I think initially what's his name? Joaquin Phoenix was supposed to be Doctor Strange, but I think what happened is he didn't want to sign like a multi-picture deal.
Oh, I thought like they wanted him to cut his beard and he refused.
Nah.
That's interesting. Why would you not want to sign a multi-picture deal, like, to what is probably the hottest franchise in Hollywood right now? Like,
he's an artist,
and I understand that, but like, that's guaranteed work.
Hmm. Well, he just marches to his own drum.
He does,
and is complicit in sexually harassing women with his former brother-in-law.
Oh my god.
I couldn't see that. And, you know, I will say that I kind of liked Cumberbatch as Strange just because he had the Hans Gruber American accent.
I didn't even...
That's what it sounded like.
I didn't even think of that, but you're absolutely right.
See, I kept thinking Hugh Laurie, the house...
Yeah, that's how I thought of it. Yeah, Hugh Laurie. I like Benedict Cumberbatch's Doctor Strange. Like, it's one of those things where you see the see someone in a role, and now you just cannot picture anyone else in that role.
Yeah, he was like definitely like the highlight of that movie. That was one of my least favorite Marvel movies, I will say. But really? he made it better. I think so.
I think I went into it with the least, with like the lowest expectations for a Marvel movie, and was pleasantly surprised, and was happy with how just beautiful it was to look at, how funny it was. It was a very funny movie, and just how well it fits in the universe without it being it wasn't bogged down by any of the other movies or anything like that.
Yeah. I just wasn't there were some scenes where I feel like really the first two acts of the movie were really, really slow. And then the third act it picked up, and I was just like, man, if you did this scene like this way, it would have flowed a little bit better.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like they did anything with Rachel McAdams too, and I was kind of disappointed by that. But the way that you felt about it is like the way that I feel about the two DC, like the two last DC movies that have come out.
See, I think with Doctor Strange too, they made him this completely unlikable character, which, I mean, he was in the books and everything like that. But and you see his progression, and I enjoyed that. And I get what you're saying about it being too slow, maybe. Like, maybe the character transition was. But, like, I think... I remember the first, like, 10, 15 minutes of the movie, it was kind of just how abrasive his personality was maybe a bit much, but I definitely enjoyed, like, the character development with him and how he ended up getting to, you know, the person he turned into by the end of the film.
Yeah. Mr. Doctor.
Mr. Doctor.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a completist, so I know I'm going to end up buying it. But yeah, it's not my favorite. I still like it. You know what, though? I like it a lot more than Iron Man 2. So
Iron Man 2 was a movie that I enjoyed a lot, and then the more I watch it, the less I like it. And that's definitely my least favorite of the Marvel films.
Iron Man 2 is the Michael Bay Transformers of the of the Marvel extended movie universe.
Well, since we're talking about the Marvel the cinematic universe, there was word that Hugh Jackman, who will no longer play Wolverine, said he would return if he could join the Avengers.
If that's not motivation to, like, just give it all over to Marvel. I don't know.
Fox won't do it.
Now with the amount of money it made, it made $80 million on Friday, between Thursday and Friday.
Isn't there a way for it to be successful and to lose money so they could just give it to Marvel?
I mean, depending what the budget was, I'm not sure how much was spent on the movie. But usually if a movie doesn't make 2.5 times what the budget was, then it's deemed unsuccessful. Even if it's like $1 trillion, if they spent, you know, like a third of $1 trillion on the movie, then, you know, or like $500 billion, then maybe it's not a successful movie. So I don't know.
They just need a Fantastic Four. They'll Fantastic Four it and give it back to Marvel.
Well, now Marvel's talking about plans for future X-Men films, and they're saying, oh, the next X movie won't focus on Xavier and Magneto's relationship, which is cool that they have plans. But, like, after every movie, no matter how much I like it or hate it, I just – there's the part of me that still just wants to see the rights revert back to Marvel.
Yeah. I still haven't even seen Apocalypse, actually.
It's fine. I mean, it's not my favorite part of the movie was Sophie Turner, like, as Jean Grey. I absolutely loved her as Jean Grey, and a lot of people complained about her. I thought she was perfect. I think she was better than Famke Janssen.
There was just nothing about the movie that made me, like, I was, like, stoked to go see Doctor Strange, especially with, you know, as you said, like, it was just a beautiful looking movie. But yeah, like, there's just, like, there was nothing that about X-Men Apocalypse that I really wanted to see.
Now, there were a lot of issues I had with the movie, too, and, like, the stakes didn't feel high. Yeah. It didn't feel like it was this world-ending, you know, earth-shattering event. Like, it was trying to portray, but it didn't, and like, I never felt the gravitas of the situation at all. It just didn't, I don't know, it didn't, like, I liked the character development in the movie was much better to me, like, for, say, like, young Cyclops and young Jean than anything else. And, of course, they had, like, a cool Quicksilver scene, the slow motion scene. But other than that, it wasn't, it's fine. I don't think it's terrible, but I don't think it's definitely on the low end of the X-Men movies where it ranks as far as ranking.
Yeah. I wonder, so I just looked up the budget for Logan. It's $97 million.
Doesn't seem like a lot.
No.
For a superhero movie.
Well, you're right, but after hearing that and seeing the movie, I understand, I guess. There are definitely special effects and whatnot, but it's not on the same level as an X-Men film or, you know, a Marvel or DC film. It's definitely more grounded. So it I guess that budget kind of makes sense to me.
Yeah.
It's still like half of or twice as much as what the budget for Deadpool was, though.
Really?
Yeah, because that was, I mean, before marketing, I believe that movie clocked in at around $50 million. But let me, I'm going to check.
And that's not including marketing, you said?
That's not including marketing, no.
Wow, interesting. Although, I mean, that sort of makes sense, because they only gave us, you know, Colossus and Negasonic Teenage Warhead. So
yeah, $58 million was the budget for Deadpool.
Wow.
Before marketing.
Interesting. So. I wonder what the marketing for Logan was, because I feel like Deadpool was marketed a lot more than Logan.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Right, yeah. like I would see commercials and TV spots and stuff, but I wouldn't see a lot for Logan.
Yeah, I feel like the marketing for Deadpool was a lot savvier.
Hmm.
And then Logan is just kind of riding on its reputation as being, A, being the last, you know, Hugh Jackman Wolverine movie, but B, being like way, way darker, and it's sort of like loose ties to old man Logan. So, you know, I feel like it's something that it's marketed less as a superhero movie and more as like a, you know, something like The Road would have been marketed.
Well, I wonder if you guys could explain this to me, if either of you kind of understand what Hugh Jackman meant by this. But he said he took a pay cut to ensure that Logan would be rated R.
Hmm.
Does budget play into that at all? Or, like, do pay rates? Because that seemed like a weird statement to me. Like, why would you have to... Maybe, you know, Fox was saying, we'll make it R, but we have to put X amount of dollars more into... you know, marketing because of it.
Maybe the expectation that less people are going to see it, because with a superhero movie, if it's PG-13, people can take their kids or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, if you know, if it's R, then, you know, then it's going to drive down, like, the parents that are going to take their kids to see it.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, like, R-rated movies tend to not gross as much as PG-13 movies, because you're alienating
the audience. Yeah.
The audience, yeah.
And that makes sense, but Deadpool flipped that, you know, equation on its head, I think, that proved that it doesn't need to be true.
I think so, but I feel like that's more of an anomaly. Because again, you go back and the movie is right for the way that the character is and people who are familiar with it, and it's it was like the kind of movie that fired on all cylinders versus something like the R-rated version of Batman versus Superman. You know, I wouldn't treat it the same way.
Yeah. I will say, with Logan, I remember at one point in time, it was this film is not yet rated kind of thing. And I didn't know if they just didn't, you know, submit it, you know, to be rated or whatever the course of action is. But this is a hard R movie. This is a hard R. So there's no way around like a lower rating, you know, a friendlier rating, PG-13 or anything like that. That's just not going to happen. It's very interesting. But it worked. I think it worked. And I'm sure, I mean, like I said, you know, 80 million first day. I'm sure by the end of this weekend, it's going to be just insane with the amount of money it makes.
Yeah. It'll make back its budget for sure. Well, now I have to watch it. Now I'm like more stoked for it. So thanks.
Yeah. I can't, you know? God, I can't wait to see it again.
Yeah, the Rotten Tomatoes is like 93 or something.
Yeah, which I'm not going to lie, it bummed me out that it dropped from 96 to 93. And mm-hmm. I'm like, oh. But, but, poor Logan. Aww. No, 93, that's great. You know, it's nothing but great things to say about this. But speaking of Logan, there was a DuckTales clip that was released. Dave, I haven't watched
it yet.
R. It was a hard R.
Scrooge McDuck is all like, fuck all y'all.
it's not a money pit that Scrooge dives into. It's really just like discarded needles.
Well, they didn't have that, but I'm sure that if that doesn't happen, I'm boycotting. I'm protesting the show.
How was the clip? I still haven't watched it.
It was cool. I mean, the nephew's heads are a little like blocky, you know.
Yeah,
they're a little bit different.
I haven't seen this clip. Is it a CG DuckTales or is it cell animation?
It's still animation, but it's maybe a little bit more modern looking than like the original DuckTales.
It's on our Facebook.
Yeah.
I know Dave posted it.
And, I mean, they did have Donald Duck in it.
That's
which
awesome.
Which is cool, yeah. Saying a bunch of stuff you don't understand.
I see a lot of people online were, like, losing their shit about the clip. Like, a lot of people seem to really enjoy it and are excited for it.
Well, it's got a good cast. It's got David Tennant, and it's got was it Daniel Pudi and
that's awesome.
What's his that guy?
And Alan Tudyk and Ron Funches.
Oh wow!
No, I'm just saying that would be cool.
Oh, I was like Ron Funches.
No, I was just naming the cast of Powerless.
Hannibal Buress, Chris Farley.
He's in everything. It would make sense for Hannibal Buress to be in it. He's in seriously everything.
But the guy from Bobby Moynihan.
Oh, that's there. So bogus. Sorry, Dave, but just wanted to interject real quick because I'm watching the clip and you see Scrooge go to take a dive and he hooks his umbrella onto a wire and slides down. So they duped us. They Guggenheimed us.
I'm watching this clip right now, too. Yeah.
But you said Bobby Moynihan's in it?
Yeah. Danny Pudi is Huey. Ben awesome. Schwartz or...
Oh, I love Ben Schwartz. Okay.
What was his name? John Raffio.
Yep.
Yeah.
he's Dewey. Bobby Moynihan is Louie.
That's an awesome cast right there.
Tony Anselmo as Donald Duck.
I'm not familiar with him.
I kept thinking, is he related to Phil Anselmo?
Maybe not nearly as racist as Ben.
Yeah. Well, at least they have Launchpad McQuack. I'd be super stoked on this if they had Gizmo Duck or made reference to Darkwing Duck.
Hell yeah. I mean, there's a Darkwing comic coming out now, too. Mm. It would be like cool for them to reference it and sort of, I mean, they have the property out to make the money off of, too. It's weird because Scrooge McDuck looks like Scrooge McDuck, but the rest of the, like Huey and Louie, don't look like them at all.
Yeah, you guys are right. They had blockheads.
It's interesting. And Donald looks like Donald.
Yeah, yeah.
Very interesting.
Scrooge and Donald look the same, but yeah. We'll probably get used to it.
Yeah.
I can't wait for the Duck Shared Universe.
Yeah. It's going to be good.
Crossover with Howard the Duck?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. You know, yeah, they're under the same umbrella now.
That's true.
That could be a thing.
Duck Spider Ham. Returns.
Spider Ham.
Just do. Bring all the Marvel animals out there. Rocket Raccoon.
You can, yeah.
Yeah, they should do a Howard the Duck thing.
You have
Whether
an episode
cartoon
where they're
collect- or movie.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I don't know if they'd wanted. Well, I mean, they should do a movie because they had him at the end of Guardians. But I mean, after the George Lucas fiasco, which I still love. That movie is horrible, but I still love it.
I watched that movie a few years ago, but so when that movie came out, I was five or six, and my mom let me watch that movie because she was like, "Oh, so whatever." It's Howard the Duck. How harmful could it really be? And I watched it a few years ago, and I was all like, man, this is a totally inappropriate movie to show a kindergartner.
That's the thing.
I remember watching it. That's exactly right, because I saw it when I was younger, and at the time, I was like, okay. And completely unaware that there are duck boobs all throughout the movie. Getting flashed by animals from other planets, but no, it is super inappropriate, but...
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't let my kid watch that movie, and she's, you know, a teenager.
They talk about... There's an episode of How Did This Get Made where they talk about Howard the Duck, and it's pretty great.
Yeah. You guys should do that. Your own version.
What else do we have for news? Okay, I put Alien Covenant trailer on the script, because I wanted to talk about it, but I realized I don't have anything to say other than this trailer looks so good. Have you guys watched it yet?
Yep. I'm stoked for the movie.
It looks like they're going to keep the horror element from the first Aliens, from the first Alien movie.
Yeah.
And the cast is pretty cool. I'm just stoked to see Danny McBride in this movie. So.
God, I hope they give him some Kenny Powers lines. I know it'll be out of place and like off tone, but still.
Spend it down, Alien crossover.
Yeah, I will say that I'm a lot more hopeful, and it's not like I didn't dislike Prometheus. I think that like a lot of people, I just had certain expectations for it, and it was just a way different movie than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
So I feel a little bit. I have that kind of anticipation for this movie. Like what I felt for Prometheus is what I feel for Covenant.
So is this essentially, because I know Prometheus is supposed to be like a trilogy, like what Alien was supposed to be, and then it turned into a much larger franchise. Now, I know that what's his name? Why can't I think of his name? Michael Fassbender is in this movie. So I'm assuming it does directly relate to Prometheus then?
I'm under that assumption too, that he's playing another android.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think it's the same one.
Okay.
From what I understand, but we'll see.
I don't know. I saw the... They showed this trailer before Logan, and I got really excited because I didn't check it out online. I didn't have a chance to. And I was thinking, oh, I hope they play the Alien Covenant trailer, and they did, and it got me so excited.
I bet it looks cool on the big screen. So
it looked amazing, and then after the trailer was finished, my wife and I looked at each other, and she's like, fuck yeah. So, yes. We are going to see that when it comes out. So, no, I cannot wait for that movie to drop.
Watch all the movies now while you don't have a baby.
Before it gets too difficult.
It's not that bad.
And then the last piece of news that I know I wanted to talk about, which is kind of cool. I think this was announced at Emerald City, maybe. I don't know. But Jeff Lemire, awesome writer. Books like, you know, Marvel books like Old Man Logan, Extraordinary X-Men. I think he's writing Thanos right now. Did DC work? Animal Man. What else did he do? Justice League Dark. And his creator-owned titles like Essex County and Sweet Tooth. Awesome writer and artist. But he came out with an original graphic novel, Underwater Welder, and that's being turned into a full-length film. And Ryan Gosling is set to produce it. And I have a very good feeling about that whole thing. Very stoked for Jeff Lemire because I like him a lot as a creator. Very excited to see one of his pieces of work get translated into a movie. Now I know like he does Descender with Dustin Nguyen, and I'm not really a fan of that book, but I know Sony optioned that for a film, I think, either a film or TV, I'm not quite sure what. But I was like, oh man, there are so many other properties that Lemire has that I'd much rather see come to life. But Underwater Welder is set to hit the big screen sometime, hopefully. And that's really exciting to me. I don't know, have either of you read that book?
Nope,
I haven't. I might check it out now, though.
It's definitely good. Original graphic novel, and it's just a man who's having trouble at home with his, I forget, it's been a while since I read it, but his pregnant wife, that's what it is. And so, you know, his profession is underwater welding, and he goes underwater and kind of sees his, you know, deceased father, and then it sparks a lot of memories and, you know, what's real and what isn't, you know, is it like an alternate reality or not, kind of thing. Sort of existential, but it's really good. I would definitely recommend everyone check it out. It's, I don't want to say quick read in a demeaning like way where you don't have to focus, or easy read where you don't have to focus on the art. It is black and white. And Jeff Lemire's artwork is very distinct and interesting, but it is a very easy read. Like when I picked it up, I couldn't put it down. I read the whole thing at once. So a couple All right. hundred pages.
You know, you haven't really let me down yet in your recommendations. Like I picked up so many books, so so if this one sucks, I'll let you know.
I think I have a good batting average, so hopefully that works out.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like I'm going to check out the book. For the most part, I'm pretty tepid on Ryan Gosling until a few days ago when I watched The Nice Guys for the first time.
I still haven't seen it, but I heard it's great.
Now I'm kind of sold on him. So, yeah.
Well, that's Shane Black, that movie, right?
Yeah.
Shane Black is just awesome, so I feel like he's not going to...
Yeah, in my opinion, he made the best Iron Man movie.
I would agree. I think Iron Man 3 might be my favorite. Kind of want to watch that now.
Yeah.
No, I love that movie.
Well, I'm going to... I think I might do that and watch The Last Boy Scout. So.
Excellent. Was there any other news that we wanted to touch on, Dave?
Nothing I could think of. I know Iron Fist is coming up soon.
Yes, less than 2 weeks.
Am I the only person who's not excited about that show?
I'm very excited about that show. Yeah. Why are you not excited?
I think that so what I've seen of it is just the trailer that came out last week, and the way that the trailer was cut, it just seemed like parts of Batman Begins and Arrow in a way. I don't feel like it had its own identity in the way that, like, when they were doing the trailers for Luke Cage and Jessica Jones, and even Daredevil, season two of Daredevil. I feel like those previews had an identity to itself. And then Iron Fist, I feel like I was just, well, number one, I'm not a big Danny Rand fan. but I just think that the trailer just looked derivative of those other properties that I mentioned. So it was, for me, it's a hard sell. I mean, I'm still going to watch it, again, going back to me being a completist. But yeah, I feel like I'm the least stoked on it.
Well, I think, I cannot wait for the show. I'm super stoked for it. I know, Dave, you're excited.
Yes.
But maybe as far as the marketing goes, maybe there's only so many ways you can market rich white male become superhero.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, people are mad that he's white. I think he's white in the comics.
He is, and I see, like, I understand with the like whitewashing with Tilda Swinton. Like, I understand why people were upset with that. With Danny Rand, like, I don't I don't want to say I don't understand that argument, because I do, but like I don't see as much of an issue, I guess, as you know, some of the other character choices that Marvel made, replacing other characters.
Like, I think it's just Marvel had the opportunity to hire a person of color to be in this role. And because I understand that the character of Danny Rand is based a lot on, you know, white kid gets stuck in wherever and learns secret martial arts.
Yeah.
And that's just an inherent part of the character, but you know, they could have switched it up and they just chose not to. And I think that's where, you know, when you have a character who's based in martial arts, like this could have been a perfect opportunity to hire, you know, an Asian American actor to play this character. And they were just like, well, we'll just, you know, find some white guy who looks like Danny Masterson.
No, I get that. And it would have been interesting if they went that route. I think it would have been awesome to see that happen. But like you said, it's sort of an inherent part of the character, as, you know, white, you know, like Danny's journey, I guess, as a character. That being said, it's also created in a time when it really was all, you know, white male characters and a few white female characters, where like, and then you get Luke Cage, who's this, you know, token black character.
Yeah.
So at that time, but so I'm excited for this movie. I think it's interesting that they decided to keep him the same. And if they keep his story the same, I'd be stoked. If they make changes, you know, maybe after the fact, it's, oh, well, they could have cast differently and it would have made more sense, or I don't know. And again, I get it, but I think I have less of an issue with this casting choice than some of the other ones that Marvel's made in the past.
Yeah. I mean, I would have loved to have seen, you know, a person of color take on this role, but it's not. To me, the biggest issue was just more of like, you know, how it's being presented, and that, and me not really being super excited about that. I will say that if the dude who's playing Iron Fist, if he's able to have the kind of levity that the character has in the Spider-Man cartoon, where, you know, he's wisecracking, I think that would be a good linchpin for me. Particularly since they're going for the whole hero, or not Heroes for Hire, Defenders
yeah.
Storyline. And so you need a foil like that for Luke Cage, who's, you know, serious.
Well, in the current Power Man and Iron Fist, Dave, you're still reading that, right?
Well, whenever it comes to the Marvel Unlimited app.
Okay.
But yeah, it's really good.
But yeah, that's exactly what Danny Rand is to Luke Cage in that story. He's sort of like, Luke Cage is like the straight man to Danny Rand's like, oh, come on, let's do it. You know, he's like excitable.
Yeah.
Jessica doesn't like me.
Yeah. So I think if the character was treated like that, I could see it working a lot better.
I think they could get there. I don't know if we're going to see a lot of that, because it seems like, I mean, we do get the humor in these movies. Like, I thought Jessica Jones was, as a character, I thought she was hilarious, just because she was very much like her character in the comics.
Yeah.
Where she's just straightforward, doesn't give a shit. And, like, that sort of, she radiates, like, a sense of humor because of it. Yeah. It's sort of amusing because of it. And I think maybe they can kind of do that with Iron Fist. With Danny, yeah. But I don't know if they could do that right away with him.
I agree. I mean, the thing about Jessica Jones and her sense of humor is that it's steeped in, it's very dark. And I think with Iron Fist, it's, you know, he's obviously like a comic, you know, comic relief in a way, like with powers, but, you know, he's like Beast Boy. You know, like he's there for the chuckles, but can do serious damage if he needs to.
Yeah. Now, I think once they get the team dynamic going on, I feel like he's definitely going to be the levity of the team.
Yeah. Did they ever finalize whether the Punisher was going to be a part of the Defenders? Like, for sure, or if he's just like a guest star? Anyway,
I don't think he will be, because I think his series is coming it's coming much later than the Defenders, I think. Dave, do you remember when the Punisher series is supposed to drop?
I don't know. I mean, I thought that that one would be the next one, the Punisher. But really? I don't know. I'm not sure what the order is.
Well, I know Jessica Jones is set for, I think, spring of 2018. So then I think it's going to be Iron Fist, Defenders, Jessica Jones season 2.
Because I didn't, I mean, I've seen, like, things about, oh, this is on the set of the Punisher or whatever. What's the girl from Daredevil? I forgot her name.
Oh,
A Nurse?
Nah, what's her, I forgot her name.
Karen Page.
Yeah. Like, they're like, oh, she was on the set of the Punisher. And so I think that's been shooting already.
Interesting. Okay.
But I'm not sure, what sequence it's in.
I'm gonna IMDb this and see if they have dates for this, because I'm pretty sure Jessica Jones is early next year. In fact, because I remember looking that up not that long. Wait, Punisher's 2017.
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
You're right. No, you're Snap. Right, dude.
Wow.
November 14th, 2017. So I think this might be when they. I mean, maybe not. Maybe they're just rushing to get it in. But this might be when we start seeing them drop Marvel shows 3 times a year from here on out on Netflix. Rather than the twice a year.
Yeah.
Yeah, Deborah Ann Wall, she's on IMDb. She's listed in 13 episodes.
Oh, snap.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Where's Foggy? No, just...
Foggy Bear.
You know what? That character is my favorite part of Daredevil, hands down.
Foggy.
Yeah. But I also can't get past Eldon Hansen being in either Mighty Ducks 2 or Idle Hands.
I always think of him as his character in Mighty Ducks 2. I forgot that he was in Idle Hands. Who was it? Devin Sawa? Wasn't he in that movie?
Yeah, we don't need that. I'm like, just like, eh.
And The Offspring.
Yep, The Offspring.
Dexter Holland's head gets ripped open.
And Jessica Alba and suggestible clothing.
All right, Jessica Jones. I'm looking this up. Season 2 premiere. It says 2018, so... Does it have a date? This is awesome radio right now. Listen to stuff up. It doesn't look like there's a date for Jessica Jones. Interesting. I'm super stoked for The Punisher, but I've been dying for a Jessica Jones season 2, considering that season 1 came out in 2015.
Yeah, but at the very least, we'll get Defenders before that, so yes. We'll still get our fill of a. Of Kristen Ritter, my future ex-wife, and yeah, you know what? I like The Punisher. The Punisher in Daredevil is great. What I'm worried about is the way that people treat that character.
Oh, as like a super ultra militant.
Yeah. Like it reminds me. I always forget that there's people who think of that extreme. Side of the Punisher when I think it was like last week was that there was that town in Kansas where they had the Punisher skull
on the cop cars. Yeah.
Yeah. And I was just like, come on guys. Like that's not what he's about, but you know, whatever.
There was a lot of heat that happened with Nathan Edmondson writing the Punisher because of it. And a lot of people were giving him flack for that, which, I think if you're going to complain to Nathan Edmondson about anything, it's that he's like a known accused sexual harasser rather than the way he writes The Punisher. But it was interesting, though, because then Mitch Gerads, who he works with Tom King a lot on, God, what the hell's the name of that book. I can't remember Tom King's book for Vertigo, but Mitch Gerads writes or draws the book for that. But I guess because he was doing Punisher sketches and selling them, and then he was like donating all of the money from the sketches for like a day or a week to veterans, which I thought was kind of cool. And then, but like Alish Cott, who is like ultra super left, got pissed off at both of them and was like, oh, the way you're depicting the character is disgusting. And the fact that you're, you know, like where the money's going to just makes everyone think that it's okay and that this character is okay. And then he quit Marvel after the whole thing happened. And it was like a really explosive, like 2 hours of Twitter. So, yeah.
I had one of those this morning, so I totally understand.
Was it with Michael Rapaport?
No, it was with a rapper where I made a tone deaf joke, and then he started attacking my experience with racism in this country. But this was just based on my pictures and my name. And I was all like, dude, I'm the son of immigrants. English is my second language. You don't even know. So I wrote this whole missive, and then he just like never responded.
Snap.
So, yeah.
Oh,
oh, well. What are you going to do? Oh, man. You guys, we've been at this for 2.5 hours.
We have. This is probably a short podcast for us, too.
Yeah, they're usually but, 7 hours.
I feel like the last one that you and I did our last episode, Dave, was 7.5 hours. But
yeah. Well, there's always a lot to talk about with DC and people leaving and then quitting and then coming back. And
that's true. And then by the time we air the episodes, the news has completely changed. And then
that's
we
exactly
look,
what happened.
We look like we don't have our pulse. You know, don't have a pulse in the situation. But no. Yeah, I think that does wrap it up for news and all other talk. You guys want to wrap it up now?
Sure. I'm going to go get dinner. Go check out this comic. I'm going to check out this comic that you recommended, and I'm going to watch Iron Man 3. I think that's what I'm going to do.
Excellent.
Cool.
I think I'm going to watch Legion after this. I have to see if my wife is awake to watch Legion so we can watch it together.
You got
to
wake her up.
I do. Normally time. I watch the show and then I'll watch it a second time, but I hadn't had a chance because Wednesday I just didn't, and then Thursday we went to see Logan, and last night I didn't have a chance, so I'm like itching to watch this episode of Legion. Show's been so good so far.
Yeah, yes. I only saw the first episode, so
it's the third episode's definitely my favorite. It's very good. It kind of strays. It's still as kind of wild and crazy as the first episode, but not quite. It's a little more grounded, definitely. I'm talking in vague descriptions, so I don't like, this is a show you can't give anything away. It's so amazingly interesting.
But I haven't started the show yet, but it's something I'm looking forward to watching. So yeah, this is one of the few instances where I'm like, yo, no spoilers.
Well, now episode 4 aired, so technically half the season's done because they're only doing 8 episodes of this. So this might be something worth just waiting and kind of consuming it all at once too.
Yeah, I'm not really a binge person, but
I also don't
watch like 2 episodes in a row. It's like probably like the max I could do.
I was just gonna say, I don't know if anyone's brain can handle more than 2 episodes of Legion at once, but it's definitely
only 5 episodes, right?
8 total.
Oh,
so,
8? Oh, okay.
Yeah, 8. So it's I mean, but there's just so much going on. They stuff each episode. Like there is no second left unwasted. Like everything is intentional. The scenery, the back, like everything comes into play in some way. It's interesting, but yeah, we can wrap it up. Ryan, if you want to tell listeners where to find you once more
again, you can check out my podcast at fttwsocial.com, and that's faster than the world,
like H2O.
yes, like H2O. The Rob is aware of the Michael Rapaport and then Toby Morse thing, and ugh, it's gross. But yeah,
It's true. I suggested you change the name of your podcast now, but that won't happen.
No, you know what? I still have reverence for that band and those songs. I just lost a little bit of respect for those guys. Well, a lot of respect for Michael Rappaport, but I lost a little bit of respect for Toby Morse. So it's just what it is.
Rappaport's out there. I think he's always been kind of out there anyway. So
I think so too.
He's sort of in his own world, which is interesting to say the least, I guess. But yeah, so definitely check out that podcast. It's awesome. Definitely worth listening to. And I don't know. The interviews are always awesome. And then you do those. I can't think of the name of the Radcasts or whatever.
Oh yeah, the Radcasts where you talk about wrestling. And
definitely just chill out conversation. It's a good listen. So
yeah, I got a few of those coming up. So yeah,
check that out. Definitely check it out. So yes, you could also check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/comicsreviews, Instagram and Twitter at Comics Reviews, and of course our website at Comics Reviews. You could find me individually, personally, on Twitter at my Twitter handle, PetanottaRob, yes. And on Instagram at CallThisRational. And Dave, where can you be found?
Well, on Instagram and Twitter, it's at Batman Petrucci. And there's the Comics Reviews Instagram and Twitter. So
all
there,
that good stuff.
There you go.
Yes. Dave handles all our social media now because I get locked out of Instagram and I can't get back in. So
yeah, cool. I don't know what is up with that.
I don't know either. I haven't been able to get on in a while, but you do a much better job updating all of our social media than I do, and thank you for that. But yeah, otherwise, thank you for checking us out. Whether it's on iTunes, if you want to rate and review us, that'd be cool. Two thumbs up. Where else are we on? I do this every time.
You're on Stitcher.
Stitcher. Yes, we're on Stitcher. We are on not Neidhart Radio. I'm going to keep making that joke, even though it's not funny
anymore. TuneIn Radio?
TuneIn. And there was one other one. Podomatic, right?
And iTunes.
iTunes. Yes. So iTunes. We all tunes for iTunes.
Yeah. That's a
story. Are you on Zanga? Zanga? Live Journal?
You could check out our Formspring.
Our MySpace page.
Friendster. Also, Everyone's Connected. Comics Reviews. No one ever remembers Everyone's Connected. But that one was kind of lame. I was on it for like 2 weeks. It was sort of in between Friendster and MySpace. But yes.
I vaguely remember that. I feel like no one remembers... everybody remembers Makeout Club. Nobody remembers... a social disease.
I don't remember that. I remember Makeout Club because the singer of Panic was the one who ran that.
I did not.
Yeah, Gibby from Panic.
Actually, I didn't know that.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I don't remember the what was it? Disease something? Social disease?
A social disease.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, it's. I'll send you some stuff.
Excellent, and. This was cool that this is our first time we had a guest on this podcast and our first time podcasting from three different time zones. So,
yeah,
that's kind of
crazy.
I know.
We've covered it all, you guys.
We are time traveling.
Coast to coast to coast.
Although, you guys are in the future and I'm stuck in the past.
That's true. Get with it, man.
I know.
But yeah, so thank you everyone tuning in. Until next time.